Duplantis. Thank you for joining us here on the stream, the WGN app, the WGNradio.com, all the fine places you can find us when the White Sox baseball is on. Roe is off today, but Richard Roper is here after paying $50 for a valet.
Well, we don't know how much now.
Well, I
there's
don't
nothing
know.
Like having a
I think downtown,
pass.
You're pretty much all in
like
50
parking,
no matter what.
Parking pass for one garage, and they go, there's no parking. And like, they have a pass that says that guarantees me the spot. They're like, but you can't park here. And then you finally have to go, I
this
have to leave
Kim
now.
This is the WGN radio newsroom. We have a severe thunder.
I thought that was a. I thought that was maybe.
I thought there might have been a breaking news situation.
I was hoping that was breaking news about my parking. Richard, you left your car running with the doors locked and no key.
Where's the key? But so you have no idea how much the rate is or anything like that. But
well,
it does seem hotels are at least 50.
All I can say is I hope the guy in front of the hotel that I left the car with is an employee of the hotel.
That's always the thing. You're like, wait a minute.
You know, all you have to do is get a black windbreaker and some yellow tape and write valet, and people will hand you, here, would you like to try my Bentley out?
So you were driving around with the parking pass and you couldn't
here,
find it. Okay.
At this building.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we appreciate the self-sacrifice.
I'm so happy to be
the
here.
The act of all the challenges you overcame in order to be here because I'm
we got
happy.
A lot going on today,
we
Anna.
Do. We do. We do. We do. We do. We do. Let's go through what's coming up.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk to Ben Bradley over on at a Bradley
I love
place.
That guy.
Roe gives him a hard time. I like him so much. But he is going to tell us all things going on at the cool. WGN TV News. We have the curator of entomology at the Peggy Notabart Nature Museum. Apparently, it's spider season.
Ooh, nice.
And that's a thing. It's a spider season.
Oh, okay.
Do you guys
I walk through webs on a daily basis. And it's the worst because you're not sure where it is. Is the spider on me? Is it
it's
not
true.
On me? And you can't get the web off of you.
And you have to do that Seinfeld dance where your arms are all over the place. And you're trying to, people are looking at you like, no, there was a spider web. Okay, sure,
yeah.
There was.
All right, weirdo.
Spider in the house. Burn the house down.
And you guys know this too. Anna knows it's like I used to live like on the 54th floor of a building,
and
they would be up there flying Spider-Man. And you see them sometimes here at GN.
There's one falling right in front of me, right as we speak.
No just way.
That's Peter Parker. Down. Don't quash him.
Well, and somehow they're okay. They're 18th floor, 30th floor, 50th floor. Those spiders, they just
nothing
they're
stops them.
Nothing. They are so resilient.
So we're gonna get the scoop on spider season.
On spider season, and why you shouldn't be so fearful of the spiders.
Okay.
And so the curator from there is going to be with us. We've got Brent Sopel with such a personal story about being diagnosed with dyslexia much later in life and how he's turned this into a way where he spends so much of his time now just helping other folks with their own children as they're diagnosed and that kind of thing. He started a foundation to help, and it's pretty amazing what he's been able to accomplish in a short time after his own daughter, too, is dyslexic. And so living with that and how successful you can be with it if you just only get the help you need.
Okay, cool.
It's pretty
good
pretty
to talk to. Stanley
cool.
Cup champion, of course.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, 2010 player Cox guy. We'd just be great to talk with him. Israel Del Toro, an American hero, will be with us as well. He badly injured in Afghanistan years ago. He's a Chicago area native, decorated soldier. He was the first 100% combat disabled veteran to return to the Air Force, and he fought really hard to return to his job because he felt, even though I've suffered all these horrendous injuries and outside I just don't look like the same guy, I'm still able to do what I used to do. And he has such
amazing.
An incredible story because he went back to Colorado Springs and started teaching paratroopers and jumping out of airplanes and all kinds of things that a lot of people in the military did not think he was going to ever be able to do. And he did it for years. He just retired. He's coming home to see his family here, and he's going to stop by here as he comes in from the airport. I guess there are a lot of delays at O'Hare today, but he was supposed to come in at 1, so he's going to come in later. But instead, we pushed him to 4:30. This afternoon.
He should have his own tarmac. Let the man get here.
That guy needs to feel like an escort or something.
Absolutely.
For everything he's done. A lot to talk to him about. And he's just an incredible guy. Mm. Total inspiration. Just one of my favorite people in the whole world. Top 5 at 5, you won't believe.
And I never do.
This is the way Roe always promotes it, right? But you don't believe it. There's always something in there like, really? That was said?
Yeah, I always have a hard time believing number 4. Is usually the crazy.
Really? Thing. 4? Right off the top. It's sort of like 5 is.
Roe sneaks that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about this? Just one of those sentences that goes for 90 seconds. There's more audio.
That is such a good Roe impression. And it's good that we can do that when he's not here.
I spent 30 years friends with a guy. You pick up a few things.
He butt dialed me 3 times yesterday.
Oh my God.
Like, Roe, hi. I'm like, is everything okay? He's like, yes, it's okay. It's okay. I'm like, all right, I'll let you go. Okay, bye-bye. And then we want to talk about the CEOs. We've all signed that letter. Did you see 145 of them, including several here in the Chicago area, signed that letter to the Senate to try to say, hey, act, Congress, do something on gun control, particularly with background checks. And want to talk about what they're trying to do and how some companies actually opted out, including Google and some other high-profile ones, said they did not want to sign that. So why is that? Who decided to participate? Who isn't? Jared Kushner's brother among those CEOs who signed that letter.
Spanky Kushner?
Senate Republicans. I think he's another Kushner, some kind of finance firm. And so he signed it, as did several other Chicago area CEOs. We're going to talk with them. And then we need to talk to you, because the J-Lo movie that I'm excited about, Hustlers,
coming out,
right?
Hustlers is coming out. The Goldfinch, which has some Academy Award winners and is based on a Pulitzer Prize winning novel. And I want to tell people about a new Netflix series that I think is going to be their next big hit. And Cardi B plays a stripper in Hustlers, which is amazing. The research she was doing goes about 5 years back, at least 6 years back. I think she came pre-glittered.
How did she possibly find the motivation?
Well, let's put it this way. You know, when Cardi B has a role, if that movie ever plays in an airplane, she'll have like three words. Because the rest you can't say anywhere except for in a strip club.
I bet she's good, though. And I bet J-Lo. Don't say it again. I don't want to hear it. But I do want to. I like J-Lo.
Scoop.
And I'm looking forward to that. And that's coming up. Then our interview with Sean Spicer. The Spicy's in town. He's over at Northeastern with a forum with Donna Brazil. And the two of them are talking politics in the 2020 election. So
he said the crowd there is 460,000 for that event tonight. So we have a panoramic photo of it.
Takes a lot of heat, but he's also in Dancing with the Stars. I'm sure you've heard. And he's begging for you to vote for him, too. At the end of the interview, he really, really, really wants you to. I would think he would be out week one. I think he is the one everyone expects to be out.
Well, do they have tap dancing? Because then he might win.
Good point. He's good at that. We're going to check in with Ben Bradley over at WGN-TV at Bradley Place coming up in just a minute. But first, let's go over to Kim Gordon, find out what's coming up at bottom of the hour in the news right here on WGN.
Anna DePaul University has a new major. We'll tell you what you can now study coming up.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro's taking the day off. We have Richard Roper in the house and Ben Bradley over at Bradley Place, the WGN-TV studios. Ben.
I always love being on the live stream with you in CLTV. Since CLTV's on cable and live stream's on the internet, I feel like we can just get crazy. Right?
It's crazy
pressure.
Time.
Yeah.
It's true.
So what have you always wanted to say?
I've said everything I wanted to say.
I've heard Rich say some of those things to former employers. Now Anna's far too kind to say that.
It's your deepest, darkest secrets time. Is that what it is? Let's start with you, Ben. You're first.
You know what? Yeah. You don't even want to see that because, boy, will it affect our relationship.
Well, I do. Occasionally, Ro does share a text or two that you have sent to him totally inappropriate.
No, he doesn't. That is covered under
therapist. There's some he looks at and says, I can't show you this. And then every once in a while, I get to see what I'm like, what?
Wow. The text forwarding law of 2007 prohibits that, I believe.
The guy code breaking and something. Yeah,
I feel like you're cyberbullying me for sharing my deepest thoughts with my friend Ro.
You guys get crazy together.
I can't imagine what Roper texts him. I mean, those two go back even farther.
3 years.
I usually do it in Dutch. Or kind of an old pig variation on German so that people might have trouble translating.
Right.
See, the difference here, Ben, is that the atmosphere here, they know that I'm going to say certain things. So, for example, with Sean Spicer in town, Anna DeVlantis, being a professional journalist,
I did the interview.
I told Jeff, the producer here, you do not want me anywhere near the building. And he's like, kind of thought you'd say that. See you later today. So this way, we already have the interview in the can. So, because if he were listening already 5 minutes ago to what I said, he would have had them turn the Cadillac around.
You get out of a lot of work that way, don't you?
Well, yeah.
But I'm sorry. You want this done professionally. professionally and respectfully, better have Devlante.
Well, the good thing is, like, you know, I got the, well, I'm an opinion guy. So, I mean, you know, so, yeah, I can walk away from something.
Right, right.
Yeah. Although once in a while, I'll say, no, I'd love to talk to that person. And then they find out it's me, and they're like, he suddenly is not available. Yeah. I've gotten that a lot, too.
Yes.
Fred's already
still waiting for Harvey to return my calls.
We are also wanting to talk to you, Ben, because this just in, apparently the University of Illinois is celebrating a record of sorts.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of looking at the numbers they put out today, and throughout the system, the University of Illinois, both the Urbana-Champaign as well as UIC campus, is boasting of record enrollment down in, I guess it's Urbana-Champaign. When my brothers went there, we called it Champaign-Urbana. Did they change that at some point? Champaina?
I always call it Champaign-Urbana.
I always called it Champaign-Urbana.
Well,
but
they,
I do
on
see
their
the
literature, call it Urbana-Champaign.
Somebody from Urbana must have given them a lot of money.
Yeah.
Mr. Urbana donated to the school, and then Mr. Champaign got pushed to second billing.
Did Lori Loughlin's kid want to go there? Is that what happened here?
Lori Urbana's kid.
Who knew? She's Urbana.
So enrollment this fall at the U of I in Champaign and or Urbana now reached 50,000 students, which is up nearly 4% from last year. What I was interested in, though, was the number of international students, because that's been an issue over the last couple of years as cash-strapped universities have gone and heavily recruited international students because they pay a lot more in tuition than in-state or even just out-of-state students. I mean, tens of thousands of dollars more. And U of I eventually said, okay, we get it, we get it. We need to, even though they're a cash cow, tamp down the number of international students and really focus on in-state students. Despite that, the number of international students in Champaign-Urbana up this year, 2%. 13,500 international students. The vast majority come from India and China to get their education there in Central Illinois.
Yeah, that's a huge number. I'm there a lot doing some, you know, doing some various work. Because Roger Ebert, of course, was a U of I guy,
right? Famously.
Has the film festival and stuff. I think part of the problem, guys, or part of the concern, is that, you know, most of the in-state Illinois residents who go to school at U of I are going to probably stay in Illinois, and, you know, we're going to be able to use their resources and their power and their knowledge, whereas a lot of the students that come here from China, India, then go back. Not all, but a lot of them go back. So, you know, it's great that you get the tuition, but you don't get, you know, when they invent that great thing or do that great startup, it's usually not in Effingham
or
Decatur.
It's brain drain, right? So they come, they displace a local student, potentially, get a great education, and then, yes, you're right, they're far less likely to stay in the state of Illinois to, you know, build their company, invent their gadget, and that is not a good thing. And the U of I has recognized that, but still, the number of international students is increasing there at the University of Illinois.
Although I would argue that the engineering program is among one of the best anywhere in the world, right?
Absolutely.
And you look, though, at the number of names we all know who've gone through that program, either graduated or not, and they go to California, all of them, and they start the founders of YouTube. You've got Larry Ellison, Mark Andreessen. There are so many people who went through there. I wish they'd stay here, too.
Well, but you go where the money is. In a lot of campuses, I went to Mizzou, and they, you know, created a, you know, what they like to call the Silicon Valley of Missouri. And I know that U of I has done an incubator where they hope to, you know, incubate these small businesses, these great ideas. But look, you know, just like if you're an actress, you go to where the films are. And, you know, if you're in tech, if you graduate from the engineering school at U of I, your dreams probably go to Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah, I guess. They can have Elon Musk, though. That's okay. But he can stay there. What else you got going on?
For the Tesla, yes.
WGN TV News.
Coming up at 9 o'clock tonight, a cover story. We talked about it a bit last week. I went to Roswell, New Mexico.
Right.
Not to see the aliens, though. Mm-hmm. They've got something else landing there.
Did you sign up on that Facebook group to go out there? Were you one of those people?
We went out there and just banged on the fence.
Let me in. I'm Ben Bradley, WGN TV
Investigates. Tell us your secrets. Where are the aliens?
Show us.
We've got November sweeps coming up. We need this.
We need this.
So tonight, we've got the story of where old airliners go to die, or in some cases, be reincarnated. It's in the middle of the desert of New Mexico, and we flew along with American Airlines when they retired 26 of their Super 80 aircraft, and they all flew out on a single day to this airstrip in Roswell, New Mexico. And it's wild to wander through this airfield where they've got 200 parked airliners and room for 600 more. You see an old Saudi Arabian Airlines 747 with a door missing, a Kuwaiti Airlines jetliner, Elvis's old Jetstar is there. And all these planes are in various states of disrepair. Yes, most have had their engines stripped. Some have had other spare parts taken from them. But others may fly again as cargo planes. So I realize in the newsroom makes fun of me that I'm a big aviation geek and this stuff interests me. But I think this is pretty cool.
It's pretty interesting.
How did you sell this one to the producers?
I have no idea how
the Elvis
need to go there for this. Totally need to be. It's very important.
So it's American Airlines, and they fly planes, including here to Chicago. The stories
there
in
you go.
Mexico.
Local angle, baby.
And oh, wait, the pilot went to U of I. Local angle.
I understand there's a plan for Blago to escape from Colorado, make his way to Roswell, and have one of the planes take him to a country with no extradition.
Yeah.
Yes. Good sources on this.
Go,
Bradley, go.
It's not even United.
No, he's
stretching. He's stretching it.
Well, it sounds
pull the hamstring with that stretch, but it sounds fascinating. Good
You'll
job.
You'll make it interesting. That's what we know about you, Ben.
Thank you very much.
Let us know what happens when that expense form hits HR up there.
Please watch tonight so I can take some more of these trips, please.
Big ratings for Ben. What time is that on?
Tonight
the WGN?
At 9.
9 o'clock. Yeah. And you'll be on the 4.
Well, the 4 o'clock news right after the Sox game wraps up.
All right.
Yep.
Looking forward to that. Thank you, Ben Bradley.
Thank you, guys.
Good seeing
you. So much more pleasant when Rose not here. It's happy and uplifting.
Love you,
Ben. I can say Kim Fox without people freaking out.
Oh, my gosh. Jussie Smollett, there are a couple other words that just don't create the same sort of reaction. But we love you, Ben. Have a good day.
You too.
See you later.
Bye.
So, it is time for the news, and let's get right to it. And for that, we go to Kim Gordon.
The itsy bitsy spider crawled up the water spout. Came the rain and washed the spider out. Out came the sun and dried up all the rain. And the itsy bitsy spider went up the spout again.
Like that song, I never heard that version before.
That's from the movie Eight-Legged Freaks.
Oh.
Probably the best scary spider movie of all the scary spider movies.
Like, really scary.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't mind spiders. I don't like rats. Snakes are not particularly my favorites. But the spiders, unless you walk face first into a web, I'm okay with them.
Oh, yeah? Well, don't watch Eight-Legged Freaks.
Movie.
And if you do watch it, though, look for a very young Scarlett Johansson, one of her first roles, is Ashley.
Oh, my gosh. How about that? That's worth checking
there
it
you
out.
Go.
All right. Well, we'll check it out. We want to talk about it because it's spider season.
It is.
Did you even know that's a thing? It is. Mm. And the curator of entomology at the Peggy Notabart Nature Museum is joining us. And his name is Alan Lawrence. Alan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, Alan.
Oh, you're waiting to say hi. That was Richard Roper and Anna. And we just wanted to ask you, so what exactly is spider season, and did it just begin? Does spider season mean they're coming inside our houses, or does it mean there's some kind of mating going on? What's going on?
The spider season, it's not exactly a spider season. It just means this is the time of the year where some spiders will start to wander inside people's homes as they're looking for warm places when we get into cooler weather.
So is that how they survive the winter for the most part, because they find entrances into people's homes? Is that really it?
Yeah, the majority aren't overwintering in people's homes. They're looking for crevices and cracks and hiding under leaf litter where they can be protected from cold winds and snow. But if they happen to find a warm house, they might stick around for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I saw that you said that you want to fill up your crevices and things like that, because if you don't want to have the spiders around, that you're inviting them. If you've got that kind of thing going on, what exactly are you talking about there that might look to a spider like a great place to crawl into?
Correct. So the first step of any pest management program, if you want to prevent insects, is to prevent insects or other critters from getting into your home. So you want to caulk any cracks that you might have in your foundation around the outside. You want to put weather stripping around your doors and windows to make sure they seal up tight. This will help prevent spiders from getting in, but also there are a number of other insects that'll try and get into your houses around this time of year, like the Asian multicolored ladybugs, box elder bugs, and stink bugs. So it'll help prevent a lot of things from getting into your house and also help with your heating bill in the winter.
There you go. Alan, I think a lot of us who work and or live in high-rises in the city are fascinated by the spiders who have that ability. I guess they do kind of a drifting thing with the silk, and they can fly almost or balloon up to 40 or 50 stories high. What are those all about?
Yeah, so there's this behavior some spiders and actually some caterpillars do too, called ballooning, where they'll let out a trail of silk to let the wind pick it up and it just blow them wherever the wind takes them. And there's a species of spider commonly found on man-made structures like skyscrapers and bridges called the gray cross spider. There are these really large orb weavers that will build webs in between, you know, fence railings or along the underside of bridges that are pretty conspicuous. So that might be what people are seeing in their high-rises.
Yeah, we saw one here recently, right here at WGN.
Yes. Oh,
well,
yes.
Anna, what happened? There was a dragonfly got caught, right?
Yeah, it had the most elaborate web. And it's amazing that the winds don't knock the webs out. I always find that fascinating. Yeah. Or that the spider always seems to be attached and doesn't ever seem to have a problem, no matter how bad the winds are here up on the 18th floor, and you're talking even higher where you live, Rich. How does that happen?
I think they're just really good at finding a spot that's protected by the wind. Surely a number of them will make webs in bad spots, and when they get blown down, you won't see them, and then they'll go try and make a web in another spot. Although they can be pretty persistent and try and make webs in the same place over and over again.
Yeah. What's the lifespan of that type of spider, Alan?
Oh, I'm really not sure off the top of my head.
What do we see here, though? What are the types that we see here in the Chicago area?
There are a lot of different spiders, but that one that's way up in the high rises that's most common is probably that gray cross spider.
Okay, that's the one you mostly see. Is that the one that's sort of like, it's kind of hairy, can grow to be like a couple inches? Is that the one I see up here on the all over the place?
Yeah, up there, they're not hairy. They're pretty smooth-bodied. Oh. And they'll be sitting sort of in the center of webs or along the cracks and edges of railing. Mm. They tend to be gray or black in color.
What are the ones that we see along the lake? Like if you go to Michiana or you go to Wisconsin and you're sort of in the, you know, that area where a lot of people go, and there are a lot of spiders. I go to the Michigan area and we see the spiders everywhere. And I just, the good part about them obviously is they're eating the bugs. And so you get, you know, a relatively bug-free environment, but the spiders are everywhere.
Yeah, when you go to shorelines or near water, you'll find a lot of spiders because that's where you're also going to find a lot of insects, a lot of prey for the spiders. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of insects that live underwater for part of their lifetime, and then they emerge out of the water and fly around. So think of mosquitoes, little gnats, caddisflies. So spiders are eating those. Along the shorelines, you can often find wolf spiders. Those are the hairy, fast-living spiders that are running around. Yeah, and those are the kind that can sometimes crawl into your house, but and that hawk and weather stripping will help keep them out. But they're very beneficial by eating a lot of annoying pests.
Right. No, I remind everyone of that because I guess I don't mind the spiders because at night then you can sit outside and the bugs aren't all, they're not all over the place. Do the birds eat the spiders? Are there any other natural predators? Like what's eating our spiders?
Yeah, there are a lot of natural predators. So you're going to get birds, mice. Those are kind of some vertebrates that'll be eating them. But there's also a number of insects that focus on spiders, and particularly a number of wasps. So mud dauber wasps, if you've ever seen those wasps that make little mud homes around your doorway entryway, what they do is they're looking for spiders, and they're going to paralyze them and then bring them back to their little nest. So they're paralyzed, they're still alive, and they're fresh, and then they lay their eggs on those spiders, so the developing young wasps have a fresh meal.
Oh.
And there are other spider wasps that feed on spiders.
That's
as well.
What's going on in those little mud
yeah, it's not a Pixar film down there, is it, Alan? It's more like a horror film.
I'm going to save that one until my daughter's at least 15 before I share what's going on there.
If you ever take one down and break it open, a bunch of little dead spiders might fall out.
I don't think I'd ever do that. Is that what you do? Is that those kinds of things you've done?
I tend to leave them. I like the bed daubers.
Right. You did say there's a humane way to get a spider out of your house other than stomping on it, which is the first instinct. You're like, okay, get rid of it, right? But there's a way to do it, and you've been talking about this. You've been putting this message out. Tell us what it is, Lawrence, or Alan.
Yeah. This works for spiders, but also any other insect that doesn't fly around too fast. Just get a glass or a cup, gently place it over the spider, and then you can slide a piece of paper underneath, and then you've trapped it, and just walk it outside and let it go.
And then tell us, are there poisonous spiders around the Chicagoland area that we should watch out for? And how plentiful are they? What do we look for there?
Right. So there are two venomous spiders in Illinois, the brown recluse and the black widow spider. Mm-hmm. Both of them are not common in the Chicago region. They're more common the farther you go southward in the state, so sort of south of the central line of the state. Some buildings sometimes have brown recluse, although they are not likely to bite. You'd have to step on one or pick one up. So honestly, I just wouldn't be worried about venomous spiders here.
Okay. And would you be worried about getting bitten by spiders by the non-venomous types, like the ones that we see crawling into our houses and outside our houses and building the webs?
Yeah, no. Generally, wolf spiders they're going to leave you alone as long as you're not picking them up. And same with the orb weaver spiders. They're more scared of us than we are of them, and they're not really going to defend themselves by biting. If you accidentally walk into one of their webs, they want to get away. Also, when you're sleeping, spiders aren't prone to biting you. A lot of times when people think they got bit by spiders,
yes,
it's just some sort of random skin infection or an inflamed hair. It's really hard to prove that you've been bitten by a spider or an insect if you didn't see it happen. You can't identify that just by the bite.
Oh, that's good to know. 612, so now should I let birds and mice into my house to get rid of the spiders? Or maybe wasps? I don't think that's what you're suggesting. You're saying get rid of them, humanely get them out of your house, and that kind of thing. Alan Lawrence, thank you
so much, Alan,
for joining us. The curator of entomology at Peggy Notabard Nature Museum.
Thank you. Had a great time speaking with you.
Appreciate your time. Have a good one.
Bye.
All right, we're going to check
in. It's a grizzly nightmare down there in the trenches, Anna.
I know, really. And this guy's not afraid of anything.
It's like
a
Saw movie with what they're doing to each other, these creatures.
Seriously. I mean, who knew that inside those little mud huts that the wasps
were, chaos is raining.
Live spite. Oh, my gosh. That's scarier than that It movie that's out.
Exactly.
I'm like, I didn't.
Maybe so.
I did not want to know that. And now it freaks me out.
With you, yeah.
Every time I'll see one of those little mud huts. All right, we've got to check in with Kim Gordon, see what's coming up top of the hour in the news here on WGN.
Anna, singer R. Kelly, a no-show in a Minnesota courtroom today. We'll explain why coming up.
It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Ro is taking the day off today. He's butt-dialing me, though, so I have some kind of contact with him. And Richard Roper's in with us this afternoon.
I feel like Ro might be doing that extra day of prep to get some of the work done, his face and his hair and his nails for Green Tie Ball.
Green Tie Ball.
Are co-hosting.
We're co-hosting. So. Thank you for mentioning that, Richard Roper. We are co-hosting that tomorrow. It's at Alhambra Palace.
Yeah.
I hope people are going. Kev, are you coming?
I'll be there.
Kim?
I have a family wedding. Otherwise, I would have been there. I'm really bummed. I wanted to go.
Lauren's coming, I think, isn't she?
No, she's out of town this weekend.
Wedding weekend.
Right. Her sister's wedding.
Her sister's getting married.
It's spider season and wedding season, and let's hope the twain shall never meet.
I'm disappointed. Lauren would have loved the spider segment.
I bet Lauren had a pet spider. A tarantula. Can't we just see she's
the one
kid?
She probably fed spiders to her, whatever that reptile is she had.
That's her wedding gift. She's at the House of Reptiles right now. She's buying her sister a snake for her
wedding. She's like one of those Komodo dragons or something in college. She was that girl with the dragons in like the Darth Vader Halloween costume.
It's like, what, you don't like that? You didn't want a bearded dragon for your wedding? Why wouldn't anybody not want that?
Everyone can pet it. We can play with it during the wedding.
Right.
Well, Kev, we look forward to you being able to make it. Do you have, you got a suit? You got a tie? You clean up nicely?
Got to head to the cleaners tomorrow morning, Rich. Got to look fresh. You know, I know Anna and Ro and you guys are going to set the table.
Anna will look spectacular and Ro will look like Ro. So that's, also just spectacular.
So I just got to look respectable. That's what I'm going
with.
Either respectable or go with the I Dream of Greeny, as they call it, because it's the Green Tie Ball. I Dream of Greeny theme,
That's nice. And Kev, just got to let you know, got to take a glass with your beer when they hand you that nice, you order your light beer, whatever else you want to have. They offer to put it into a glass.
I can't have a Miller Lite in a can.
Don't show us up, please, in the middle
of the dance floor.
Don't show us up, Kevin.
Guys, how many Miller Lites do you think I can shotgun? No, we'll class it up. We're all fun. Yes. Rich and I are going to book it over there together. Right, Rich? Right after the show tomorrow?
You got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Because nice.
I know, Anna, you guys got to be there a little bit early. So
we
I think
do.
Rich and I are going to
try to we're the guys that, like, you know,
land the plane
the car like Bill and Ted on an excellent adventure. Like, I only got one dress shoe.
You got the extra deodorant?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah.
Grant will be like, where's Kevin?
How do I tie this? All right. Let me tie your tie for you.
Just give me the clip on. Forget it.
No, here comes Rich and Kevin.
We're all set. I got my green tie today, so I'm ready to rock.
Where'd you get your green tie?
I did a little, is it Men's Warehouse or Just Vape Bank? It's just I think they're both combined now at this point.
And so you just kind of went in there and said, I need something green.
Pretty much, yeah. Been putting it off. And I have so many ties from like the 800 weddings I've been to, but I do not have a green tie.
Nobody did green?
I don't have a green tie, so I'm like, I'll get a fresh
tie. Well, now you can use it for St. Patrick's Day, too.
There we go.
Right. You can dress as a leprechaun.
I'll put away the leprechaun suit and put on my green ball tie for this year's St. Patrick's Day festivity.
We should mention, though, that speaking of spiders and such and things like that, Alligator Rob is one of the people who are featured to come to this. He's in town.
Now it's a party.
He's got the girlfriend here in Chicago.
He's got second billing to Pete Wentz on all the flyers there.
And is then, that true?
And then you guys. I'm like, come on.
We're below them?
No, I think you're actually a top.
Alligator Rob?
You're up top. Actually,
I think Alligator Rob is a bigger celebrity, but it's pretty
but
cool.
But yeah, is he bringing
the green gator with him? That'd be pretty cool.
Knowing Grant, he's arranging something. You know that, right? Because he's going to want the pictures.
The grand entrance,
the promotion.
The sparklers go off. The lights dim. Fog machine rolls in.
In this jar is the original ivy that Rizzo hit a double off of the Dodgers in a playoff game. I've been growing it and cultivating it.
This is the original rubber band that was tied around the snout of the alligator when it was taken out of the Humboldt Park lagoon. And I'm not kidding. I bet that will happen.
Amazing. You know, alligators have the same amount of teeth as the Cubs went before they won.
108. Funny enough,
teeth,
it's 108.
So we're going to do a whole thing where we're going to put the Bartman ball remnants in the alligator's mouth.
Don't blow it up. Don't blow it up.
And then
please.
Joel Murray's going to come and dedicate it. It's going
to
be great.
So, and are you and Ro occupied the entire time, or do you guys get to, like, get off stage and have some fun?
Yeah, no, okay. I think our responsibilities are fairly limited. We sort of do introductory things.
Because I need you guys to sneak me into the VIP area. That's my main objective. Ro, Anna, come on. Let me follow you to the VIP. I'm with them.
Pretty
I'm
sweet.
I'm with them and Rich.
Get that wristband. I'll cut my wristband off, and then Kev will put it back on.
Do, like, the whole Lollapalooza?
Yeah, I'm going back to the bathroom. I need the wristband again, man.
Put it on a little loose, okay, and then you sort of in the bathroom.
Yeah, like, no one ever gets thrown out of the green tie ball. It's too classy until 2019.
Where'd Kevin go?
Off you go.
He's trying to get in the VIP area.
Bro, Anna, your sports guy lost it a little bit.
He was
pounding Miller Lite, and then he like borrowed someone's wristband. It wasn't even a real wristband.
Then he was demanding White Claws with his bros he snuck in. We don't know what happened, but he's out on Randolph Street right now. Can you get him a ride?
Right. That is not representing us well. Not at all.
We'll be, hey, we're
kidding. I know. But it is a fun party. I mean, VIP or not, the whole thing, they have so many great restaurants, and they really bring it. They, like, the chefs really want to bring it and, you know, explain to you what the restaurant's all about. And it's a party. You know, it's like a black tie, but it's a true party.
That's
what I love about it.
We'll stick to your green bottle Stella's, Richard.
They usually do have those. I expect to see some green bottles there. And also, Kev, eat early tomorrow because then you want to save that appetite for the amazing food.
We got a good spread.
Outrageous.
And the entertainment is too. So they've got the Dr. Bombay, which plays, it's like a great band. It's like a house band almost for the Green Tide Ball. They play every year. And everyone's dancing, like really, like just like loose dancing. It's fun. And then Pete Wentz is going to be their featured guest. But then they have a DJ to start things off even before all of that, too.
And it's always like it's a wonderland when you walk in.
It
is. Set decoration. It's like straight up, it's like movie level and the costumes and all of that. It's pretty amazing.
They have like performers that fit the theme, mixing with the crowd and moving
genies
in and out.
And all kinds of things like that.
I'm getting my hair done and my nails did tomorrow morning, so I gotta look fresh for you guys.
All right. Yep. I already got my pedicure, so that wow. part's done. Yeah, but you guys don't need to worry about that. So it's a fun time. And tickets are still available. I mean, a few thousand people come to this every year.
Some people wait till the last minute, but I know it's close to sold out, but a few still available.
Yeah, a few are still available. It's, Grant says they were ahead of last year's schedule in terms of selling, and I think last year did eventually sell out. So go on, go online, get your
gatewaygreen.org.
That's it. Thank you.
Do we have the Ro Bell available without Ro here?
There you go. No, he takes all that stuff with him in a little box.
He travels with him.
Oh, yeah. Safety
deposit
box.
That's what that third suitcase is every time
100%.
He goes from there. His headphones.
His little megaphone.
His little
Johnny Depp cologne that he wears to get into character.
Sauvage. This is my Sauvage. Can you smell it?
Yeah.
His sound effects machine.
All of
bell.
That.
He brings that.
Oh, there we got a spare bell.
His pilot radio thing that he does on the plane wherever he goes.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, we're going to need to put that away. The actual pilot will be directing this flight.
I need my toys. Yeah, his little speaker thingy. All of that will be there. It'll be a lot of nonsense and fun, and it's a classy thing. So, you know, be class it up a little bit. Yeah, so,
no problem.
Yeah, you'll see us all out there, and it'll be a fun time. Cool. All right, it's time for the news. Let's get that. And for that, we head over to Kim Gordon. It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper in today for Ro as he's taking the day off. He'll be back tomorrow. Our next guest is Brent Sopel, former Blackhawk, NBC local hockey analyst. You know him as the former stud defenseman who won a cup with the Hawks in 2010. He's also, which you may not know about him, has had a lifelong battle with dyslexia and has started a foundation to try to help other kids because he didn't necessarily have any help when he was growing up, didn't even get a diagnosis until much later in life. And Brent, we want to thank you for joining us to talk about this very personal issue.
Well, thanks for taking time, and I'll pay it for all those fine compliments when I see you, but
having me on. Yeah, come in studio with us next time. I know today didn't work out as well, but next time we'd love to see you. I mean, talk about this foundation, because it seems as if you have poured your heart and soul into this, and you take time to answer emails to help people, because so many people go through this, and I wonder if they how long it takes to really get diagnosed and know that you have it, have dyslexia or any form of it.
Yeah, you know what? It's one of the most least talked about however diseases you want to talk about, but one of the most prevalent. You have cancer at 1 in 2. The next line is dyslexia at 1 in 5. So if you do the math, that's 20% of the population has it. And
is the issue they don't know? 1 in 5 just seems so high to me. Mm-hmm. It means 1 in 5 are all the people I know. Does that mean that people don't talk about it, or some people don't necessarily even know that they have it? Like you knew you had difficulties in school, but you didn't have a diagnosis.
Yeah, it's a combination of both right now. It's a lot of people don't know. There's a stat released the other day that they said there's about 40 million adult Americans have it, and 2 million know it.
Wow.
And Brent, you've written very eloquently about this. You wrote a piece talking about how when you were a kid and you loved hockey and, you know, you had this great hockey IQ, but, you know, you tell this heartbreaking story. You're in the 9th grade. You're asked to get up in front of the class and read a couple of paragraphs and you can't do it. But you didn't know why. And you talk about even through your playing days, early playing days, because you didn't know what it was, you would isolate yourself sometimes, you know, you'd drink on your own, all these things. And a lot of it, I think, stemmed from the fact that you simply didn't know that you had this until later in your life.
Yeah, you know, and the biggest thing with dyslexia is self-esteem. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're struggling at reading when you're 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old, you know what, it starts then. Why can your friend read? Why is my brother and sister reading? What's wrong with me? And then teachers don't know, and then you get called dumb and stupid and lazy. Mm. Those are scars that never go away. And, you know, they did a big piece on Robin Williams. You know, it's obviously suicide prevention month, but Robin Williams had dyslexia, which they will never talk about.
Wow.
Dyslexia kicks off bipolar and depression. So let's call it spade a spade. Dyslexia, 50% of people in prison in the world have dyslexia.
Huh.
So being here in Chicago, you know, everybody is up in arms about the south side, the murders. How about that? If you can't read, you can't get a job. So I would not far from being in their place. I'm lucky to be alive today. If none of us could read, we should be sad for them, not up in arms.
Well, that piece that Richard references called Lost in My Mind, that very personal, very candid account you give detailing growing up with dyslexia, not knowing it, being mocked by other kids, being horrified to have to read in front of the class, just the fact that teachers or people thought you were slow, you're just not that bright, you're just not going to be able to do anything because of this issue, that there are options available and so many of them. What is it you tell parents now who have kids that are dealing with this?
You know, it's something that can be fixed. And, you know, obviously we're born with our brains are wired. We'll never see the world the same as everybody else. So can we find a way to read? Absolutely. There's programs out there. You got some of the richest people in the world that have it. Steve Jobs, Robin Williams, you got Richard Branson. These guys are brilliant.
Albert Einstein was famously, dyslexic.
It's just, if you can diagnose that at a young age, now we know how to handle it. And that is one of the biggest things, so you don't end up like myself later on in life.
Walt Disney, Winston Churchill, JFK,
Quentin Tarantino, one of the great filmmakers.
45 minutes.
Yeah,
going on.
Listen, everybody.
So there's a benefit in that. You just said something. You just said struck me. We never see the world like anyone else, and there's a benefit in that if it's channeled in the right way and dealt with in the right way. Do you find that schools are able to work with kids who have dyslexia, or is it kind of resting on the parents to find that the help they need in order to help them succeed?
You know, it's a combination of both. You know, this is all very new. I like to say, you know, back 20 years ago, if you're gay, you know, you're afraid to come out because everybody wasn't on that page. Today, guess what? It's no problem. Everybody supports you. You've got legislation behind yourself. You know, I'm trying to do the same thing with dyslexia. You know what? Just because we see the world differently doesn't mean we're dumb or stupid. Half the time, we're geniuses. Half the people in NASA that work there are dyslexic.
And you were able to find the escape of hockey. In your case, it was
correct.
You poured everything in hockey, and you find though that one of the things that it was very interesting to me in reading your piece in this firsthand account is that there is not getting help, just trying to work through it on your own was a destructive thing. It's destructive because the other people don't see what you're dealing with, and you're struggling, and they view it in a different way. That some have turned to addictions, and some have turned in a lot of really bad directions because of dyslexia.
100%. You know, you talk about self-esteem, and you know, there's growing up in school. How many teachers always said, you know, kids, if you ever got a question, you know, answer. There's never you're never a bad question.
Mm-hmm.
You know what my response to that? 100% there is.
What do you
because
mean by that?
I see the world differently. So what I might think is okay, guess what? The other 80% of the students are going to think it's pretty dumb, the question I ask. And they're not, you know, kids aren't nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what I see is different. So there's a lot of education that needs to go on there. And that's where, you know, you talk about 65% of us are addicted to drugs and alcohol because you get laughed at. You know, a simple question where I think is normal, everybody else is going to make fun of. And I always say there's no such thing as a class clown or a bully. There's a reason why. And I was that, you know, I was a bully because, one, I didn't know that was the only way to handle myself. And I didn't know what was going on, but, you know, there's a reason and there's a root to that problem. Now, what is it?
It's a good point. I mean, if you see a kid who's struggling in those ways, sometimes you need to get to the bottom of it. And I will say, just, you know, having a lot of members of my family who are educators and work in the Chicago public schools and that kind of thing, there's so much of this that is on their radar now that wasn't 10, 20 years ago. It just wasn't there. I mean, if you're sensory issues or ADHD or dyslexic, there are ways to learn, and they've figured out ways to sort of help those kids succeed. And it's so important. You hear from parents all the time. I was saying that hearing that you read emails and you answer, you know, these parents just kind of desperate for, you know, let us know what are the resources available. How can we help our kid? How can we direct them in a way that will make them feel normal, I guess?
Yeah. You know what? You know, like I said, I always get back to people. It takes me a while sometimes, but and you're right. There's a lot more research and understanding what dyslexia is and how to handle things. But, you know, obviously, we're so far we're just scratching the surface. When you talk about, you know, 2 billion people, 1 in 5, that's a lot of people that you have to deal with, you have to educate, and you have to understand how they operate. So there's a lot of work there. There's a lot, you know, many, many, many years of this, but, you know, anytime that I can help a parent or help have a kid understand, and, you know, when I talk to kids, I'm like, you're not alone.
What's it like for you now, Brent, writing an email or reading? How do you do that?
It takes me a long time. And, you know, part of the education part is that there's a lot more to dyslexia than just you're flipping your B's and D's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes me a long time. You know, I'll be reading a sentence and, you know, I'll have to read it 4 or 5 times because I'm focusing so hard on what I'm reading that I don't retain it. Or if there's a big word that I come across and if it doesn't sound out and spell the same way, you know, I won't get it. So It takes time to go through these emails, and depending on what they're asking, resources, you know, take some time to research and figure out what they need. But and they're not alone, and I'm here. You know, I spent yesterday up in Capitol Hill.
Brent, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about your visit to D.C., and I want to promote the event that's linked to your foundation and give people that information. Will you stand by for just a second? Because we have some breaking news, and it's pretty important stuff. We're going to get to that and come right back to you. Brent Sopel, former Blackhawk, and his foundation is BrentSopelFoundation.org. Kim, let's go to you. This is The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper in today, and we've been talking with Brent Sopel. You know him as a former Blackhawk and a broadcaster, but he also has a foundation. It's www.BrentSopelFoundation.org, helping those with dyslexia. You were in Washington, D.C. yesterday, and the first thing that struck me is you have a new haircut, Brent. You don't have the, that long look going on anymore. What's going on? Why'd you shave it off?
Somebody told me I had to grow up. I don't know who that was. I'm pointing your finger, but... I'm working on it now. I'm trying to grow it back out. Now I'm in the chia pet stage.
I love it. You look good. You look good. So how was that? What was that experience like meeting with lawmakers, talking to them about dyslexia? I assume you're trying to get more help and resources for people who need it.
Yeah, that's actually the second time I've been up there in July. I spoke and back up there again. It was a busy day. I met with a lot of representatives. From Arizona to Arkansas, Louisiana, to Senator Dick Durbin, had time with him, California. So, yeah, you know, I'm just a Canadian trying to roll ahead up there. Trying to get help. If the kids get help, they're going to be fine. There's a lot of genius kids out there, and that's the future that are getting left behind. And, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to get them the help and the resources that they need. But if you talk about the prison system, you know, when you have 50% of them can't read, they're dyslexic. You know, if we can save 10% of them, look what they can do. For taxes, paying taxes, but just living a life and being role models and examples for their kids. Just it's just sad. I don't want anybody to feel the way I do every single day.
I believe it. Yeah, I mean, I also saw that you used to read bedtime stories to your kids, and you'd make stuff up because you really couldn't read it, and you didn't want to tell them that. But I think there's a children's book in there somewhere. Are you working on that?
Yeah, you know, I had some characters that I used on stories every night. They're going to Six Flags or their first day of school, but you know, I use the same characters. I'm working on that book slowly. You know, I'm trying to. There's only 24 hours in a day right now. I'm trying to find a little bit more. Please, I was 26 or 20, 28 hours, but I'm not having success with that one. So it's definitely in the works. But, you know, being up in Capitol Hill is number one, along with all the parents and kids that I can, help out and really make a difference. Being on the ice means nothing to me. Being able to help a kid or a parent understand what's going on and just what I get out of that, that's definitely what I'm supposed to be doing. I finally found out exactly what my purpose in life is, and that's definitely it.
Your daughter also diagnosed with dyslexia. Was she young enough that she was able to find the right path?
Yeah, so that was 10 years ago when I got diagnosed. So now she's a senior in high school, and she's doing great.
Good.
Thank goodness that we caught it when we did, and for two purposes, one for her. But, I could be sitting here today not knowing and still struggling with why. It hasn't changed much other than the light bulb went on and saying, I'm not that dumb or I'm not that stupid. There was something behind there. So she's doing great, senior in high school, looking at colleges and trying to find out what's going to be the best one for her with her dyslexia and everything else that she has going on. So, the parent side of me is very, very proud of her and how hard she works. And
I bet.
Every day is a new day.
Tell us about the event. You have a celebrity golf tournament coming up.
Yeah, October 2nd. Here in Lamont, the old Russell Slater's golf course. Yeah, a little celebrity golf tournament trying to get out there. And again, dyslexia is something new. They're trying to get people involved and, for one, have a great day. But also, there's a lot of messages that will be passed along there and what dyslexia is about. And, like I said, there's a lot more to it than just flipping your B's and D's. So you know, if everybody wants to participate, please go to the website. Let me know. We're just trying to spread the word of what this is, so everybody really can understand. Know that it's okay. You know, it's not gonna kill you if we can catch it at a young age.
And people, need, as you say, Brent, over, and you're so right. You know, especially kids. You know, they need to know this is not your fault. This is the same thing as if you needed glasses, or you needed a hearing aid, or you had a physical injury. There's a way to approach this, but you have to know you're not stupid, and it's not your fault, and you haven't done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Exactly, and you and everybody's still learning, and you know, teachers are there to teach and not to diagnose. So there's a lot of education going on to parents, to teachers, and you're right, we're born that way. You know, we're born with our right brain wired differently, and we use our right brain more. So that's exactly it. We didn't pick or choose. This is how you are. Now let's embrace it. And it's a tough at a young age to embrace that, because you know you stand out. So it's just trying to pass that message on that you're okay. And you're not alone. I'm here with you. So, you know, if I can just pass that on and know that, you know, those kids, you know, have somebody who understands it, because if you're a parent and you don't have it, you don't fully understand it. And that kid knows you fully don't understand it.
Right. Well, it's amazing what you're doing, the work you're doing. BrentSopelFoundation.org. That's where you go if you would like to sign up for the golf tournament and also the other resources that you offer. That's the right spot, right, Brent?
Yeah, correct. Absolutely. And again, I thank you guys for, you know, allowing me on here and, you know, spreading the word of dyslexia.
Hey, Brent, real quick, too, before we let you go, we got to ask you. Of course, you always have a special place in the hearts of Blackhawks fans for 2010. Believe it or not, I'm sure you're thinking the same thing. It's right around
the
corner.
There's sports now.
and here we go again pretty soon. Do we have hope in Chicago for this Blackhawks squad? Disappointing year last year. Are they going to bounce back?
Here's what I would say. Chicago, we're spoiled, so just take a step back. Take the ball. We got 3 Stanley Cups in 6 years, which is a dynasty. So we'll.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper in today as Ro's taking the day off, and we are tracking that severe weather. You heard tornado warning. Tom Skilling telling us about from portions of DeKalb, Kendall, and Kane counties. And you also heard there in Kim's News that the Aurora police are saying that there's a tornado siren going off. So dangerous weather in the area. Use caution, and we'll continue to follow that throughout the show today. We're going to be checking in with a meteorologist later in just a few minutes here. But we want to, we have a very special guest here in the studio with us. He's an American hero, and his name is Israel Del Toro. I'm honored to call him a friend of mine, been friends for many, many years. And whenever he comes in the Chicago area, we try to get to talk to you, DT. I'm so happy you stopped by. I know the trip in was rough, but you were you just retired from the Air Force. You were injured in Afghanistan years ago. You went back into the military, and just an incredible story. How's it feel?
Retired life is boring.
Like, don't get any ideas. Relax for a while, will you? Jeez.
You were jumping out of airplanes until, like, what, a couple weeks ago?
Honestly, like, my last official day was the 28th of August. And I go work out, and I come home, and I'm like, what do I do now? I can only play video games so much. Yeah, the other day, I was actually outside killing weeds, and I had, like, an epiphany. I was like, oh, my God, this is my life. I'm not going to be that old guy outside taking care of his lawn.
Yeah. You deserve to relax a little
getting
bit.
Getting into all the neighbor's business. Oh, I see the Gundersons could use a little paint job. And you're like, you're the guy out there.
Yeah,
the
neighbor. Guy.
Yeah.
Sitting on a rocking chair. I was like, get off my lawn, kid.
You, let's tell a little bit about your backstory here. For those who have not had an opportunity to meet or read about DT, you were a special ops station in Afghanistan years ago when you were in a Humvee that was hit by an IED. Burns over 80% of your body. You went through, over 100 surgeries?
I mean, yeah, got like 130 plus
surgeries to get you back. And in a coma at one point, wasn't real clear what was going to happen. And your wife, Carmen, who's a lovely person I've come to know over the years, she prayed and all kinds of things happened. And your family was able to, you guys have just gone on and prospered since, and it's amazing because you've become the spokesperson and such an inspiration for so many people. And now you're like BFFs with Prince Harry, you're winning medals at the Invictus Games, you got the Pat Tillman Award at the ESPYs. I mean, life has taken you on quite a ride. I mean, it's just It's remarkable.
It has. It's been a unique journey. You know, I always like to say it's kind of like the movie Forrest Gump. When he's talking about all his different journeys, what he's seen throughout his voyage. And I kind of feel that way sometimes. I'm like, wow, I've gotten to see some interesting stuff. Even though what happened, we suck. Because, it did suck. But I've got to see some real cool things, meet some real cool things, and help people on the way of this journey.
Now, you're here in town, it turns out, because there's another veteran getting help, somebody who's returned from... Tell us about the event you're here for.
Yeah, so tomorrow up in Frankfurt, there at... is it JD and me or JD Potts and me?
CD and me?
CD and me.
We've been there.
We have.
Yeah.
That's a great for you. Yeah.
It is.
They're going to award a triple amputee wheel accessible smart home from the Tunnel Towers Foundation.
Yeah.
From the firefighter that ran from the tower all the way, or the tunnel with all his gear all the way to the tower.
Yeah.
To the tower and then passed away out there. So they asked me if I would come out and speak. Actually, the mayor of New Lenox asked me. We come because I'm friends with him, too. And so I'm like, yeah, of course. Anything I can do to help these guys out.
So he'll get a smart home, completely, fully equipped and fully operational. That's really amazing.
DT, I want to ask you more about that. We have so much to talk to you about. Let's just break for just a second here because Kim Gordon's going to update us on that severe weather that's moving through.
Yeah, Anna, we have some good news. The tornado warning in northern Kendall, southeastern DeKalb, and southern Kane counties has been canceled. That warning was in effect until 5 o'clock, but it has now been canceled.
Canceled. Okay. Well, that's certainly some good news there, even though the severe weather remains, so still using caution. Let's come back to DT. You're talking about helping another veteran. Back when you and I met, I don't know how many years ago, I don't even want to say, we were doing this. We were raising money for veterans who were coming back injured, and we were trying to help with living independent lives when you come home. If your car's not outfitted for your particular disability, if your home's not, you're not exactly living this independent life. And so those were the things at the time that were hard for the military to just wrap their brains around in terms of how people were coming back in these states that you hadn't really seen from prior wars. Do you find that there is more help now for injured guys and women coming back?
There is. Sometimes, the VA system or even the government tries to fit everyone in the same box, and we don't. Each guy has different injuries. Me, like myself, being a burn guy, I need shade, AC, to keep cool because I can't regulate my body temperature. Unlike a guy that's missing a leg, he needs a wheelchair, he needs more accessible stuff, and it's different. So having these different charities and organizations out there that are able to help where the government or, the VA can't really help is a big, big, big impact on all of us. And there's a lot more now that are able to do that now than when I first got hurt.
To suit those individual needs, because you can't just throw a blanket over all this everybody's just different.
Yeah. We're all different. We all have different injuries, different needs, and sometimes people don't realize it until it happens.
And what about DT, psychological support and emotional support too? Because as Anna's talking about, these brave heroes come home and everyone says thank you for your service, but there's a lot more to that, and there's things you're dealing with on the inside as well.
It is. Having that support of family and friends is very important. I got to see it, but my wife probably saw it even more. They're in hospital where those guys that didn't have the support and you will see they wouldn't last. Like, they gave up on life. And so when you have that support, it's amazing. Even to this day, anytime I come in town, of course, Anna hits me up and, yells at me if I'll come hang out with you guys.
Right. I'm like, well, I heard you were in town because it always makes some kind of headline or some press release. I'm like, what?
I have to read about you coming in? Come on. Yeah.
I'm like, do I get a text? Exactly. Before you were friends with Prince Harry, I always got a call. Yeah. I got a dinner.
You used to be right at the top of the speed dial. Now you're on the second page.
Anna begins with an A, but somehow it comes below Prince Harry now. I don't understand that, but this is the way it goes.
But, they still reach out to me. My friends from where I grew up in New Lenox, always say, hey man, let's get together, let's do something, stuff like that. It means a lot. It does help heal the soul.
Absolutely. Cause, beautiful.
Yeah, we did see some bad stuff out there, and sometimes you just need other people to help you get through it, and forget about it. For some of us it's easier than others. For me, it was always easier. I could always disassociate for what I did downrange to when I got home.
Mm.
You know, it's what I did. Okay, now I'm home. But
you're able to compartmentalize that.
I can.
Do you work with other veterans on that, on those issues, DT? Have you? I know you've been training over paratroopers and things, but do you work on the other issues as well?
I do. You know, they have me. I'll speak to them. I'll you know, because they always ask how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
How were you able to get through it? And I, you know, I will always tell them, like, you know, I had this support. I had these steps that I would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say mine may not work for you, but maybe something in there might
right.
might help.
Take something out of
yeah,
this.
Take yeah, take out of it.
Everything, yeah.
So that's what you try and do. You know, it's been brought up as a military guy, you know. You try and make things better for those who follow you. Yeah. And that's what I try and do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's awesome.
It is awesome. I was at your retirement party, and it was absolutely amazing to see. I mean, it was all the honors you would expect of someone fitting of someone like you, the things that you've accomplished. And George Bush, President Bush, had a message for you. I mean, how many others had, like, video messages for you in addition to who was there?
It was crazy. All, you know, all my, I guess you can say, like, celebrity friends that couldn't make it were sending videos. They were asking, hey, can we just send a video? I'm like, yeah, cool.
That's cool.
It ended up being, like, 10 of them, you know, from President Bush to Vice President Biden,
nice.
To Dave Attell and Jeff Ross, to John Stewart and Chris Cooper, Guy Fieri, even Mark Hamill. You know, that was the coolest one.
That may be, yeah.
That wow. is Mark awesome. Hamill.
From one Jedi warrior yeah. to another, I mean, right?
That's awesome.
He literally says the force is strong with him. I'm like, oh, dude.
Damn, that's good.
Oh, that is so cool. How did you meet him? What was the circumstance?
Well, I'm friends with Tony Orlando. You know, Tony Orlando
yeah.
was uh-huh. there.
Yeah, he was at your
retirement ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And, you know, his brother-in-law is security for him, for Mark Hamill. And they knew I was a big Star Wars fan, same with my son. So they introduced
that's,
us. And,
wow, that's
you know,
really cool. And he's such a great guy.
And he was so cool. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm friends with, you know.
Do you look around Luke sometimes Skywalker. And just say, what? Yeah. How did this happen?
It does. And it's always funny, like, with my son.
Hmm.
Uh-huh. He doesn't get starstruck.
He doesn't.
He just,
he's a really, teenager now, right?
He's 17.
17.
You know, wow. In high school. He's like, oh, those are my dad's friends, you know.
Yeah.
Until about 3 weeks ago, John Stewart and Dave Chappelle were coming to Colorado to
was
perform.
It for the Invictus Games? Oh, performing, okay.
Performing, mm-hmm. yeah. There at Red Rock. And my son's never asked me for anything. Like, mm-hmm. can you introduce me to this
right,
person
right,
and
right.
all that? And I was going to go see the Zac Brown Band.
Oh, yeah. I love Zac Brown.
And watch him. And I was going to get to meet him because I like Zac Brown.
Uh-huh.
But my son's like, Dad, I really... Dave Chappelle's my favorite favorite comedian.
Of course.
Can you ask John Stewart if I can meet him? So I was like, my son's actually asking me.
He thinks you're so cool.
Wow.
I know, he does.
Finally. He's realized how cool
right?
I am.
So we go, and he gets to meet him. And I've never seen my boy get fangirled out.
Well, did he really?
I mean, he was like,
oh, that's great.
And the cool thing, Dave Chappelle recognized me from the Netflix comedy that I did with... Jeff Ross and Dave Attell.
Dave, yeah.
Yeah, the bumping mics. And he was so cool. And, you know, I used to tell him that I used to have a patch on my uniform that I used to wear that says, you know, I'm Rick James, you know, with the B word.
Yeah.
And he loved that. And then he's like, hey, what are you doing the next day? I was like, nothing. He's like, hey, do you want to go to the Rolling Stones concert with me?
Wow.
And
oh, my
he's
gosh.
Like, he's like, here, give me your phone. And put my cell phone in there.
No kidding.
And my son, like, taps me on the shoulder. He's like, Dad. You got Dave Chappelle's cell phone. You got Dave Chappelle's cell phone. And I've never seen him freak out like that before.
That's amazing.
Cool, yeah.
That's so
but
cool.
But stuff like that, that's like, I really just got Dave Chappelle's
cell
phone.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
What's so cool. What are the goals now, DT? Are you just going to take it easy for a little bit, relax, and do some of the things you're doing to help other veterans?
Well, I did, you know, I took some time off, and it was boring. I ain't gonna lie, it's so boring. so bored. I was like, I need to do something. You know, I gotta find my niche. You
DT,
know?
Hang on 1 second. We're gonna be joined by the radio audience here. We've been on the stream here at WGNradio.com and the app, and we are on.
Oh, I can feel that.
You can feel
more
it. Thank
people.
You for joining
hello,
us here
everyone.
On WGN Radio. It's Anna DeVlantis, the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, and Richard Roper is here in studio for Ro today. We have in studio 2, just to sort of recap for those who are joining us now, an American hero, of the highest type, highest honors, Air Force Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. He is a Chicago area native, badly injured in Afghanistan years ago. He's become just an inspiration and in so many ways. And we were just recapping, you're back here to help some other veterans. I want to mention another story about you. There's so many remarkable things about you. We mentioned you've been in the Invictus Games and all the Warrior Games and won all these medals, become close with Prince Harry and all these celebrities over the years. And
she's
received
really stuck
so
on the Prince
honors.
Harry thing.
She likes the name drop.
I've seen all the video and pictures of him hanging out with Prince Harry. I'm like,
I'm more impressed
just take
by the Chappelle story, but that's okay. She's more Prince Harry, okay?
Yeah. He's like BFFs. I didn't get it. But you were also something else just so remarkable about you, DT, in addition to everything else, is that you were the first 100% combat disabled veteran, I think, in the Air Force to return to active duty. And I remember talking to you as a friend at the time. You, as hard as you fought to come back from these horrible injuries you'd gone through in Afghanistan after getting hit by an IED, you fought even harder because you wanted to return to this job that you loved in the military.
I did. You know, it's people always ask me, why? Why? It's like, DT can make so much more money if you retired. It's like, it's not about the money. It's like, when you truly find a job that you truly love, why do you want to give it up? There's tons of people that work in jobs that pay them millions of dollars and they're miserable.
True. Yeah.
I was like, I wasn't miserable. I loved what I was doing.
And
I
you clearly felt, too, you had more to give and more to serve and more wisdom to share and more, experience.
I knew I couldn't be an operator. I couldn't go outside the wire anymore, unless we become like Star Wars and I get a Luke Skywalker hand.
It's soon.
He's a mind trip, But I knew I could teach. I knew I could teach, prepare guys for the next step and, contribute in other ways. And that's what I thought. And I fought for that. Because I loved serving my country. I love being in the Air Force.
So tell us what you did then when you got back in. You were in Colorado Springs, and what was your role?
When I first got back in, I was in San Antonio, and then I did that as an instructor for 5 years for special operations, for preparing young guys. And then I started competing Paralympic style, and I went out, became a world-class athlete for the Air Force, where I competed for the Paralympics. And then I went at the academy. I had to figure out what I was going to do. And they asked me, DT, you taught the enlisted side. How about teach the officer side? And then at the meantime, would you like to continue jumping? And that was one. There's three goals that I wanted to do before I retired. It was calling an airstrike again, which I could have done easily. Fly a plane, which I got to do.
Amazing.
But the last one was I wanted to jump again, which was going to be real hard.
Yeah.
So when they said, do you want to jump again? I was like, oh, hell yeah. I didn't say that word. I'm sorry.
You can say it.
And I was like,
you can say it.
And I started, and they got me in. And, of course, people say, oh, how are you going to be able to do this? I'm like, obviously, you don't know who I am.
Yeah.
Right.
When someone tells me I can't do it, it's like, I want to show you.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah.
And luckily, I had great leadership behind me, great teammates, the rigger loft where, they pack all the stuff, created a shoot for me. And, March of 2017, I did my 131st jump after 12 years.
Was that a life highlight, that moment, that jump?
It was so cool, That was doing that again.
Wow.
But I think my last jump into my ceremony was probably my coolest one, because I jumped out with a bunch of my teammates. One last one in
beautiful.
The military.
Yeah.
Then having my family and friends down there was really meant a lot.
Yes. 9/11 anniversary yesterday, day to reflect, remember those lives lost. Also, the time when it marks when we entered Afghanistan, where you were stationed. Do you, we feel closer than ever to finding a way, a peace agreement, a way out of there. Do you look forward to the day that, would you like to see that?
Every warrior wishes for peace.
Mm-hmm.
Those who don't, I was like, obviously you've never been a real true warrior, because any true warrior wishes for peace, never wants to go out there and do what he has to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, we always wish it, but we know the reality, how it is, it's, I don't know if we'll ever get it. I hope we do. But there's always, you can always pray and wish that we eventually get to a peace process.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that correctly?
Process, yeah.
Process, mm-hmm. Yeah. Where we won't have to send guys out there, but, when we do go out there, we know what we're doing.
Yeah, no, I believe it.
And why we're doing it.
And those of you who have joined us on the radio or weren't on the stream earlier, you were talking about how there is a lot more help for veterans returning from war, and that you're doing a lot in that area in terms of people coming home injured, in terms of people who coming home with special needs, and you're here in town for something special to help a certain veteran. Tell us how people can help if they're listening right now and they say, hey, you know what? This is a cause I really want to get behind. What can I do?
Well, there's plenty of organizations out there. I always like to say, you know, look for your local ones, because usually more of that money goes to the cause that you want to help.
You can specifically see it. You can actually see your money in action.
You know, there's some real big ones out there, and there's some that I support. You know, but I usually like using smaller ones, local area. Mm-hmm. You just got to do your research. You really do got to do your research. You know, the one that I'm doing, that Tunnel of Towers Foundation, great organization. You know, these guys take care of the families of not only service members, but first responders, you know, where they give them a mortgage-free home, you know, and takes care of to, you know, another one I like to help is the Simplify Fund / Americans Fund.
Mm-hmm.
That's another great organization. Or even the Fisher House. You know, those are all great organizations. But, you know, I always like looking for, like, me specifically, because I think it touches me, because I grew up without my dad and without my parents. I lost them young.
Right.
So those organizations that help the children of the down service members or first responders is the ones I always like helping out, especially more.
And Richard, I was going to say earlier, with the big retirement party in Colorado Springs, as fun as it was and how many dignitaries there were, but when you guys let loose, when you go to that little warehouse along that gravel path and the mariachi bands come out, and it's like, you guys know how to party in the Air
Force. I'll bet.
Oh, yeah. It took me 2 days to recover.
I was just like, wow. I had no idea what to expect. I thought it was going to be like one of those little, you know, affairs where you've got the little white tablecloths and the big cake. And it was not at all. It was a fun party.
That's great.
But we thank you for your service. Oh, you want to say something, DT?
You know, it's like us military guys. You know, we work hard, but we party even harder.
You've earned it, baby.
Oh, my gosh, you have. We thank you for your service. An honor to call you a friend. And thank you for making the time for us here at WGN, Air Force Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro.
Actually, Senior Master Sergeant.
Did you get another promotion? I don't remember.
You know, I like to say the senior NCO tier, which is three tiers. Master Sergeant, Senior Master Sergeant, Chief Master Sergeant.
Okay.
I swear to God, the middle one, senior master sergeant, my rank is like the redhead stepchild of the
senior NCOs. You know?
I think I called a master sergeant or a chief master sergeant. I was like, dude, well, you know, I'm the middle kind, like I'm middle child syndrome. I've always been the older one, but now I got a middle child syndrome.
Senior master sergeant Israel Del Toro. Welcome home. I hope you have a good time with your family while you're here. And thanks for stopping by to see us.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, CT. We've got Kim's News coming up in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper in for Ro today. And as you just heard Kim say, that that warning was canceled, right, Kim?
Yes, it was canceled. So we could have another round of severe weather later on this evening. So I don't think we're totally out of the woods yet. I'm saying there's already some tornado warnings in Iowa. And so possibly later tonight, we could be having the same weather situation around here.
Got it. But that tornado warning that was in effect for DeKalb and King counties is canceled. And we do have some severe weather, thunderstorms. And we'll keep an eye on that throughout the rest of the show here. We want to get to the top five of five. Let's talk about what's coming up here on the show. We have the CEO of Edelman Communications, Richard Edelman, talking to us. He's one of those 150, roughly, CEOs who wrote the letter to Congress about doing something about gun control. Kind of an unusual thing that CEOs getting involved in this. But
very unusual, because CEOs usually like to, you know, there are a few cases we hear about, you know, very political. But listen, they're in the business of attracting business. So the last thing they want to do is usually get involved. So it's pretty impressive and quite admirable, quite frankly.
Yeah. And so we'll ask him why he's part of it and what it is that they're requesting. And a number of local CEOs are part of him, but he's one of them. And he'll be talking with us coming up at 5:40.
Great.
And then you're going to talk to us about some movies coming up, including the new Jennifer Lopez movie, Hustlers.
Yep.
and Unbelievable and Goldfinch, the other two coming up. And then our interview with Sean Spicer. He's in town for a forum with Donna Brazile and sat down with us earlier today, so that will round out the show. But you know what time of day it is right now, Richard. You know what happens every single day, Monday through Friday, at this time of day. And if I just press this button, it all goes. Let's go! Let me try that again. That was a little weak.
It's there it is. Let's go! Sure, because I was ready to do it in case you needed me. I was warming up the vocals. 5 at 5 on the Rokon Show with Anna Tavlante.
Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again. Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Okay. Checking in at...
number 5.
Hey, Dorian. Former New England Patriots star Rob Gronkowski. We remember him. Gronk. Opened up about the types of injuries he has sustained during his time with the team. Remember, he retired at, 29? Yeah, like he's like
29.
Seems so young to me. And he was
30 now, but I guess 29 is basically when his playing days ended.
So successful. In an interview on CBS, he revealed to Rena Ninon how many concussions he has endured in his playtime.
I will let my son play football, but first off, I will educate him on the game. You know, educate him on like what I went through. And I truly believe that anything, you know, any injury that you receive is fixable, though. I mean, I went through it. I had 9 surgeries, probably had like 20 concussions in my life. Like, no lie, probably like I remember like 5 like blackout ones. Like,
but you
I don't
said
remember.
You had a pint of blood drained from your body after the Super Bowl because of internal bleeding.
Yes, because of internal bleeding. But like I said, I'm fixed.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm fixed, he says there.
Wow.
And, you know, it's sad to say, but when you hear this and you think of a guy, you know, who's only really a young man.
30
and
years old.
You hate to say this, but his future's almost inevitable. And we've seen it time and time again, former players in their 40s and 50s who are suffering the effects of playing for it. So, you know, all due respect, you ain't fixed. And, you know, a lot of that stuff is going to be a lifetime thing. Andrew Luck, by the way, turned 30 today, and people were criticizing him for retiring. This is why.
Right. Their bodies receive so much abuse. Why are people, Kevin, why are they on Gronk watch, though? If you turn on, like, you look on social media, everyone's like, well, he's coming back. The announcement's coming any second now. Is this part of that? Does this feel like something like that to you? That's it's PR thing?
Not necessarily. I mean, he's sort of making himself a brand where he's this entertainment guy and this entertainment mogul popping up on... Yeah. TV specials here and there, and look, I'm not going to play doctor, but if there's one thing you can't really fix, it's the CTE and these brain injuries that they're enduring. The pint of blood that was drawn from his body came from his thigh. He suffered a pretty bad injury in the Super Bowl. He said he couldn't sleep for days. I think that's a little bit different than your brain, Gronk, so it's obviously something to keep in mind. It's crazy what these guys go through. I mean, it's, you know, we've heard past players say going through a game of football is like enduring a car wreck. And I don't know exactly how accurate that is, but I mean, I'm sure in some cases it probably is pretty similar to going through a car crash.
I remember a former player once telling me, even when you're so-called healthy, and as Kev knows, no one's ever 100% in the NFL, ever. Yeah. But this player told me that even if he had no injuries to speak of, if you woke up what he woke up on Monday morning feeling, you would immediately call 911 and go to the emergency room because you'd be in that much pain. Because that's how much shocking pain you'd feel.
Yeah, I think, and also to your question, Anna, the Gronk watch thing, there was just stuff on social media. People will bombard. Are you going to come back, Gronk? And people are just kind of, well, maybe he'll come back midway through the season. You know, so I don't know. So maybe he will.
Maybe not real. It's just maybe hopeful, I guess, the Patriots.
Hopeful. People throwing it out there.
All right. Well, that's Gronk. Let's get check in at...
Number four.
Senator Ted Cruz, well, he hedged when asked if he would accept Mayor Lori Lightfoot's invitation to visit Chicago to discuss the impact of guns on the city. Remember, the mayor said, well, come on out here, Senator Cruz, if you want to talk about Chicago and invoke the name of our city. We'll ride the streets together. We'll talk about things. But Ted Cruz says a meeting like that, well, it's just going to turn into a political spectacle. The invitation, this is his quote, the invitation as I perceive it, is to a political circus that does not seem a terribly attractive invitation. Cruz told he said that to the Christian Science Monitor. Lightfoot said she was not at all surprised that Senator Cruz is not jumping at the chance to visit Chicago.
It's ironic that a guy like Ted Cruz talks about a political stunt. He's the master of political stunts. But my invitation to him to Chicago was sincere. I think it's not ever a good idea to cast aspersions on a community, particularly one as rich and as diverse as the city of Chicago, without knowing any facts. Come here, come to the west side, come to the south side, learn what we're actually doing, talk to the members of the community who whose lives are at risk, and help us build community and get resources to help us address the gun violence. It's not a surprise to me whatsoever that Mr. Cruz says, oh, let me give you this excuse why I'm not going to come to Chicago. If you're not going to come to Chicago, you're not going to learn the facts. Keep our name out of your mouth.
She said it again. Remember, ooh, that was how she started the whole thing. Like,
she's absolutely right. Although, honestly, I don't. Who cares? I don't want him here. What's he going to do?
What would that be?
He just met with Alyssa Milano, you know, and then...
How'd that go?
You know, talking about the political circus, and I love what she's doing, but it doesn't do anything. He's not going to do anything.
It didn't change the thing. Stay, it was civil. Yeah. That was nice to see. There was a civility. Yeah. There was a conversation, but at the end of the day, do we need Senator Kerry?
No, I'm fine with that.
All right, let's take a break here. Okay. We're going to check in and see what's coming up bottom of the hour. Then we're going to get to your three, your two, your one. We're going to talk to the CEO of Edelman Communications about why he signed that letter the CEO sent to Washington about guns and gun control, what they're suggesting, why he signed it, what they're doing. But first, Kim Gordon with what's coming up bottom of the hour in the news.
And a more severe weather could be threatening the Bahamas. We're following the path of this latest storm. We'll bring you the details coming up.
Hey, this week on Chicago's Best, it's all about juicy, meaty, tender goodness from porterhouse steak to whole fish. It's Chicago's Best Off the Bone, Sunday night, 10 WGN TV.
Great read, Richard Roper.
I prefer ribeye.
Ribeye's the pick for you?
It's my number one.
What about you, Rich?
Medium rare.
Porterhouse.
Say it again.
I'm just even saying. Slower. I'm giving Kev a little
food porn.
Steak
even
porn there.
This time. All right,
take it easy, buddy.
I was just at a steakhouse the other day. One of those that they come along with all of them on the platter and show them to you and sort of touch them with that little.
Yeah, and give you the whole description. I prefer the ones where they actually take the cow and they bring the cow into the restaurant with the drawings on it.
It's like, what do you want? What
some
do you want?
Health code violations,
you want
but it's
you
worth
want
it.
This? Yeah. All right, we're in the middle of the top five at five. We've got your three, your two, your one. So checking in at
number three.
Mm-hmm. Uh oh, what? What?
What's that?
Why? Mm-hmm.
Why? Good question.
M-Z.
What's that, you ask? The village people, of course. They definitely see a need to be unhappy. In fact, they're angry. The White House helped a YMCA spoof video go viral because no one got their permission, apparently. Mm. So they're not happy with that. Victor Willis, writer and frontman for the village people, says his group is not impressed by the Missouri farmers who threw down their best disco moves while standing in cornfields. Lots of chicken, milk, and cows, and even soy behind them. The intent of the USMCA, you know, the USMCA spoof, is to push Congress, hey, pass that new US-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. That's what they want.
We need to pass the USMCA. We need to pass the USMCA. We can grow everything that people enjoy, like with chicken, eggs, and soy. USMCA.
Trying to get Congress's attention. You're done with that, right?
Well, can I just... Two quick observations here about this. Hey, I'm not sure they know about the true meaning of that song, since they're having so much fun with the message they might be sending out, which I love. But, you know, the YMCA wasn't really about just playing basketball at the YMCA. You know, I think sometimes people lose sight of that. The other thing is, leave it to these guys to use a song from 1978 as a cutting-edge parody.
It looked cute. Yeah. I guess the village people are not happy with it. They're trying to get the attention, and there's a lot on the agenda for Congress. They're trying to consider what they're going to make moves on, if anything. And, you know, we're going to hear a little bit later from the CEO of Edelman about the CEOs who are trying to get gun control legislation passed. Farmers want this passed. I don't know. Does that do the trick? Does Congress look at that and say, okay, let's act?
And by the way, it's parody, so there's nothing. You don't have to get anybody's permission.
It's like you can't
I believe they're going to be doing
it.
Copacabana by Barry Manilow next, a parody, and they might find out that Mandy wasn't really about a girl either. Okay.
Whoops. Yeah. All right, checking in at
number two,
Jennifer Lopez.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dropped by the Tonight Show last night talking about her new movie, Hustlers, which you'll be reviewing coming up at the just a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Opening Friday, it does, this film about strippers fleecing Wall Street. high rollers require J-Lo to learn how to, you know, to do the pole dance. You got to pole dance if you're a stripper, which wasn't easy, she said, even for someone with her expertise and her kind of dance moves. So Lopez turned to her friend, former exotic dancer, Cardi B. Well, she knows how to do that, right? Mm-hmm. She's winding up the movie as herself.
It's like acrobats. It's like learning gymnastics or something, you know, but with a pole, it was super hard. I remember I called Cardi. Cardi's in the movie as well, Cardi B. And she, I was like, you have to be in this movie.
And she's like,
you know this world.
Yeah.
You know this world. Oh. You could teach us. I'm learning how to pole dance. I said, it is really hard. This is really hard. She goes, oh, yeah. It took me years to master. So, but now I'm great at it. Well, then you have to be in the movie. And she was like, absolutely.
I know you're going to tell us about it. I kind of hope this movie's good. I'm a J-Lo fan. I like, you know, she's a great dancer. Yeah.
And Cardi B is in it. If you took out all the F-bombs in her lines, she would have like two words in the film. But we'll talk about it a little bit. But okay. It's interesting because people say, oh, gosh, it looks like, you know, just the female Magic Mike or something. And then, you know, it comes out of the film festivals and people are using like the Oscar word.
I heard the Oscar word. I was wondering if that was serious. So we'll have to talk
about
that.
I'll let you know.
Okay. J-Lo also rumored to be among those potentially who are part of the Super Bowl halftime show. So her name's out there for that as well.
Lip sync with the best of them. I mean, she's a great performer.
Ouch. Richard Roper.
I think she's doing it. I think she's going to do it.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
It seems like you wouldn't be mentioning it if it wasn't somewhere in the pipeline, but we'll find out more about that. Mm. Coming up, finally checking in at
number one.
Just a precious interaction between a father and daughter has gone viral. After the young girl was caught wearing lipstick, Peter Sowell went viral after posting the video to Facebook after he was caught in the bathroom with lipstick all over his face.
Did you do anything in the bathroom?
Mm-mm. I was putting some lipstick on and then I was giving my phone.
Whose was that?
It was my lipstick.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you ask anybody if you could put it on?
I asked myself. Yeah.
So whose lipstick is that?
Mine.
You bought it?
Yeah.
Where'd you buy that?
My lipstick?
Yeah.
I buy it from Home Depot.
Home Depot.
Oh,
that is adorable.
My lipstick. Did you say lipstick?
It's very, very cute. And we are raising an entire generation of children who in 15 years are going to hate their parents for posting everything that ever happened in their lives.
Because it'll always be out there, but it's super cute. She's adorable. She's going to be proud of that. All right, let's wrap this thing up.
The top five at five.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper in studio with us today. You may have seen this news today. The CEOs of some of the most recognizable companies in America, Uber, Twitter, Levi Strauss, signed a letter, an open letter to Congress urging lawmakers to please do something, don't delay, do something about gun safety laws. And it gets very specific. And a number, like we said, 145 CEOs from major U.S. companies signed this. It's an unusual move, and we want to talk to one of those CEOs. With us is Richard Edelman, the president and CEO of Edelman, the global communications firm. And I want to thank you for joining us.
Of course.
Richard, tell us why you decided to sign this letter and what you hope to accomplish here.
Well, first of all, it's an urgent time for CEOs to stand up and speak up because of Dayton and El Paso and continuing violence in cities like Chicago. And so what we're calling for is background checks and red flag laws and safe storage of guns. We believe still in the Second Amendment and proper use of guns, but you know, we've now hit a tipping point, and people want action, and business should put its shoulder behind getting the Senate to move on legislation that's been passed by the House.
This is, you described it in the letter as proven life-saving measures that you want to see in the bill. Generally speaking, gun safety itself is not a polarizing issue, right? It's just everyone wants guns to be safe. But the laws that get us there are. And I wonder if CEOs in general, I mean, this is not, if it isn't core to your business, was there hesitation to get involved in this, knowing that you answer to shareholders with a variety of views and that this might not be good for business?
So Edelman did a study the last week of August around America, and what we found is 70% of Americans would trust a company more if the CEO speaks up about gun safety. Hmm. And 4 out of 5 people told us they would buy more products from a company whose CEO spoke up on gun safety. So these are, in a way, the flashing signs of a movement in America towards need for action. They want the CEOs to put their shoulders behind legislation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Richard, as you were saying, I mean, these are extraordinary times because, you know, I can recall a time where most consumers or customers or clients, you didn't know the politics of the CEO, whether it was the store you were entering or the communications firm you were hiring, because you didn't want to know, you know, and it didn't matter. But as you're saying now, this is an extraordinary time where you are seeing this. It's kind of remarkable to see this. And as your study, and survey found out, a lot of this really is common sense and transcends politics. And it's something that it's hard to argue against.
Look, 3/4 of people also told us they want CEOs to stand up and speak up on all issues and not wait for government. Mm. And again, whether it's LGBT or guns, it's the time that business has to step into a void left by government. And so Walmart's action a couple of weeks ago, deciding not to sell ammunition for ARs and also to restrict the carry of guns into stores, is a signal moment. Similarly, Levi Strauss CEO Chip Bergh stepping up and speaking out on behalf of all of his customers and saying, you know, enough's enough.
So the specific measures mentioned, help me with this, the background checks that would extend to individuals and gun shows, the red flag laws that members of a family could report someone if there's behavior for a court to decide whether or not guns should be removed from possession. Those are some of the things that you're standing behind. Are there any others you want to mention to us that you're urging Congress to consider?
Look, the Gun Safety Alliance is a coalition of 10 nonprofits from Sandy Hook to Everytown to Brady, and they are pushing for an agenda that also calls for safe storage of guns. You know, I've heard too many stories of a 10-year-old wandering into the closet and finding a loaded gun and shooting a friend by mistake, not knowing. That sort of thing shouldn't happen. And we're talking again about proper use of guns. And amazingly, 75% of people we surveyed who were gun owners want these laws.
Tim Cook and some others opted out of it. Notably, some of the tech firms, some of them just said this isn't part of our core business. We decided long ago we were going to focus on our business and stay out of it. Is that, do you understand that decision, or would you prefer that some of those powerful voices jumped on board here as well?
So I'm going to have a dinner in Chicago for CEOs in a couple of weeks. I'm going to encourage more of the big companies, food companies and others to join this movement. But each company CEO has to judge. You know, Tim Cook's been very outspoken on LGBT, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applaud him for that. I think every CEO has to take temperature of employees and of customers. But our survey is absolute evidence that America wants change now, and that people need better legislation.
Tim Cook, to be fair, he did say, I'm heartbroken about what's happening in my country. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing, expecting different results. Time for good people with different views to stop finger-pointing, come together to address this violence. Have you heard anything yet from lawmakers? Do you expect that you will? Will there be meetings scheduled? You have 145 very powerful voices in America.
So I'm very optimistic that senators in a dozen red states are going to see our study and are going to hear from their constituents. And again, PEOs do matter in this because they're donors and they're also influential in community. And I'm hoping that we can persuade them that this is not a political vote. This is a vote for America. This is a vote for the betterment of community. And listen, here's what's changed. We actually have specific ethnic groups being targeted by madmen. And so whether it's Hispanics in El Paso or Jews in Pittsburgh, this is a new low level. And that's why Edelman has decided to do pro bono PR for the Gun Safety Alliance. And I have 60 people who immediately signed up saying, I have to work on this client. That's incredible.
It is incredible. It's also, I think, incredible that business leaders are not afraid to get engaged in this issue. It really says something that powerful voices are speaking up, and it isn't just everyone, people protesting or a variety of voices. The more people who tell Congress that this matters and this is important to us, it makes a difference.
What will you... But I was with Pastor Corey Brooks, who runs Project Hood in Englewood in Chicago, and he told me that between 50 and 80% of the young men in the Englewood community have guns. Mm-hmm. That's completely crazy. And yes, there's economic development that's necessary to get these young men into good paying jobs, but we have to stop the gun culture and stop the availability.
I guess, but what law would help there? Did he suggest anything there?
Well, he again suggests that there be registration, that there be background checks, and again, that it'd be much, much harder to have trans-state shipments of guns. He said it's not any longer drugs that's the number one business in the neighborhood, it's sale of guns.
Right, flow of guns into this city, as you've heard the mayor talk about regularly. What is the next step, though? What will CEOs do? You said you're going to host these meetings. Are other CEOs doing that? Will you take a trip to Washington to put the pressure on? How does this campaign continue?
Well, we're going to continue to make the case publicly in the media. We're going to particularly do so in the 12 states where there are essential swing votes in the Senate. And we're going to hope that we are able to catalyze people to write to their legislators and make this, again, not a political vote, but a vote for sanity. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, business needs to stand for good and push government to get out of stasis.
Richard Edelman, we appreciate you coming on with us and sharing your views, and keep us posted on your efforts. We appreciate it. Richard Edelman from Edelman Global Communications, President and CEO. Thank you.
All the best. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're going to check in with Kim Gordon now, find out what's coming up at the top of the hour in the news here on WGN.
And a singer, R. Kelly, was supposed to be in a Minnesota courtroom today. We'll tell you why he was a no-show coming up.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Madison Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. All right, we have some news, and it's Game of Thrones news, right, Richard? What's the breaking news?
I wanted to hang on to this for L2-D2, Lauren, but she's not here. And the news can't wait, so I'll send it to her. But a lot of people know that after Game of Thrones ended, There was a lot of talks because there's so many books about prequels, and are we going to see something else? Well, now Deadline Hollywood is reporting that the House Targaryen prequel from George R.R. Martin is
himself?
In the stage now where they call it, you know, the pilot order is about to happen. The minute if HBO orders the pilot, it's going to happen. That means, you know, there's all kinds of scripts and other streams of the series that are in various stages of development, but it looks like this is the one that's going to go forward. It's going to be, so House Targaryen, which would be the dragons, it's going to be set 300 years before the events of Game of Thrones.
300
when
years.
Dragons ruled the world. There weren't just the three of them flying around.
So we won't see like
time.
The Dragon Queen or anything like that.
It would
because
be
this
about
is 300 years earlier.
Daenerys'
that's weird.
Great, 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 so great, 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 great. Grandparents.
So there would be none of the original cast members?
Well, you never know.
You never know.
It might happen, but I don't think so. You never know. There's a book called Fire and Blood from George R.R. Martin. The first volume's already out there, and it's actually, you know, it starts with 300 years before Game of Thrones, dragons ruled Westeros. So ooh, this is going to happen. And now,
that's crazy.
I don't want people to go to their HBO, to their you know, their DVRs right now.
Try to download
their
recordings.
It. Or try
to it's
check not
it
available
out.
Yet. My guess is if they're ordering a pilot, you know, in the very near future, we're 2 to 3 years out probably before it would
gosh,
actually.
Because I can't wait
once they
long.
Order the pilot, then they're going to see the pilot. You know, they'll decide. HBO, it's not like, you know, back in the day sometimes they would just air a pilot on network television. Then you'd never see the show again. It would air one episode or maybe two episodes
but
and it
now?
Would be canceled. But with shows like the Netflix series or HBO, they order a full season. And usually, if something like this, probably a couple of seasons. That's why you're able to binge watch these shows. Because mm-hmm. they're not going to give you two episodes of something that's this expensive and then just pull the plug on it.
Because that's the thing. I mean, they spent so much money on these on these shows, but it was totally worth it. And you think about what a phenomenal success it is. Pretty cool idea
I
like.
The episodes were starting to cost like maybe $10 to $15 million per episode, which is still low budget for a movie, but when you realize you're talking about 8 or 10 episodes, now you're talking about $150 million production budget. That's huge even for HBO. But a show like Game of Thrones was a hit in about 200 countries, not just here. So you think about all the subscriptions. You know, it made a lot of money for a lot of people. One of the things HBO, and I give them a lot of credit for this too, is they're concerned about, you know, putting a glut of prequels or even sequels of Game of Thrones out there because the standard is so high. They don't want to cheapen the brand or just be like, oh my gosh, there's too much. So I think the key here is to get maybe some of the people who are involved behind the scenes, not necessarily the creators, but some of the writers and the production people who worked for years on Game of Thrones involved. So it looks just as good and feels just as good. And you can imagine the cast, as you said, you know, we're not going to have the original cast members, but there will be big time stars who will want to be a part of a Game of Thrones prequel.
Naomi Watts is already, her name's being tossed out there. There are a number of others who wouldn't want to be part of this. I mean, it's just, it's
Cardi B.
Like,
how about Cardi B?
She's hot right
now. She's hot right now.
J-Lo, were there strippers 300 years
Bieber?
Before? I mean, you know, it's interesting because you say cheapening the brand by doing too many different prequels or extensions and that kind of thing. Did Star Wars sort of see that with like the Han Solo thing they tried
and
to do?
I think they have. I mean, look, you know, it's still one of the most successful franchises ever, but there's so much out there. And then the spinoffs and then the, you know, the TV things and stuff like that. And the Han Solo, which I thought was good, but a lot of people, they didn't like it. And I think they have gotten in that area where it's like, okay, you know, let's pull back. Certainly, some people feel that about some of the Marvel Universe characters, too, where you're like, okay, wait a minute. This universe is getting too big. It's all about that quality.
All right, so this seems like the prequel is going to happen. We just might have to wait a little while for it to happen, and we may not get all the cast members. What's next for, like, the Kit Harringtons of the world and the Sophie Turners and all the people we grew to really
Well, Sophie
enjoy.
Turner, you know, she's
a Jonas now.
Yeah, and speaking of, so she's fine, but speaking of, you know, saturating the marketplace, she was in the X-Men Dark Phoenix thing, which was a complete bomb, a complete bomb this summer. So some of the cast members, Emilia Clarke has got a ton of stuff in the works. She seems to be getting almost maybe the most work. And then a lot of those other actors, you know, that were kind of, you know, playing the veterans and stuff, they've been around forever and they've done a lot of stage work together. They've been on other British shows together. They just keep on working because they're great actors.
They're phenomenal actors. Yeah. Part of the success of that whole series, too. It wasn't just about the special effects and the dragons and stuff. They were awesome. All right, we've got the news coming up in 2 minutes with Kim Gordon right here on WGN. And then we're going to talk to Richard about movies coming up and Sean Spicer here in Chicago appears on our show. It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Richard Roper in today for Ro, and you're reviewing some movies for us, including the movie Hustlers with J-Lo, and there is, hard to believe, but I've actually seen stories about how she and Cardi B and the whole female ensemble in this movie has some Oscar buzz around it.
Yeah, a lot of people talking, Anna, about the Jennifer Lopez performance. You know, 21 years ago, she was in a Steven Soderbergh movie called Out of Sight with George Clooney, and it was a really strong film, and it really showed and showcased her abilities as an actress. She can be really good. Most of the 90s and the 2000s, she was always playing like the romantic lead in kind of fluffy comedies.
Lee with Ben Affleck,
and
remember
G. Lee
that
with
one?
Ben Affleck, and, you know, Made in Manhattan. She was the least believable hotel maid ever, you know, all these kinds of things.
Right.
But
What's cool about this movie is she's playing a kind of a veteran stripper at a New York City, Manhattan strip club, who is, you know, kind of a legend because she's an amazing dancer, but also has been around the block more than once and takes the young girls under her wing. This is an interesting film, too. Hustlers is based on a true story. In the late 2000s, early 2010s, a group of strippers got together and decided they were going to fleece these Wall Street, there's a D in a bag that people use sometimes to describe these guys.
I know what you're talking about.
And especially because it was after the financial crisis, and these women kind of justified it by saying, you know, these guys cost people millions of jobs, and banks collapsed, and there were bailouts, and not a single one of them went to jail. So they figure, like, and plus these guys, they're going to the strip clubs, they treat us like junk. So the plan would be they would go out with these guys and party with them, and then slip a little roofie in their drinks, and then when they were passed out, max out their credit cards or run up bills of like $5,000. It was kind of a, yeah, look, obviously it's a felony. We should point that out, but
it's kind of traceable, isn't it?
Well, here's the thing. That's the beauty of it, Anna. Okay, these guys willingly would go to the strip club or meet the women, and they would use their credit card at the strip club.
Okay.
They just usually wouldn't run up a bill of $5,000 or $8,000, and then the next day, or whenever they'd find out about it, well, who are they going to tell this story to? Are you going to tell your wife, hey, by the way, the platinum card has an extra $8,000 on it? No, they're going to pay and get it off the books. Or are you going to call the cops and say I was fleeced by strippers? And the other thing is when they'd call these girls, these women, and say, hey, man, what the heck? They'd say, well, you had a great time. Just, you don't remember? So, you know, it was sort of like they were kind of put in this position where they could get away with it for a long time. We got a clip here early on. So, Jennifer Lopez is, as we said, this veteran stripper. Constance Wu, who people know from Fresh Off the Boat and Crazy Rich Asians, plays Destiny, kind of an up-and-coming stripper who is taken under her wing early on by J-Lo.
I was a centerfold once.
No way.
Mm. 93.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Back when Stevie Wonder came in.
What the... Stevie Wonder coming to club for.
Casey had him in the champagne room. Swears to God he's in blood.
Wow. How come you're so good? I see you with every single kind of guy, and I don't know, it's like you have them all figured out.
I guess I'm just a people person.
Good stuff. I'm giving this film 3.5 stars.
Wow.
It's really strong. It kind of reminded me of a much less violent Goodfellas, because you know they have the narrator, the Constance Wu character, recounting what happened. You drop in all the pop music like Scorsese loves to do, like Night Moves by Bob Seger, that kind of fit things. You have like the long tracking shots. It's clearly influenced by that, but obviously it's not as serious in terms of the content. And it really kind of works as a procedural to see how they did this, and also about all the bonding and the sisterhood. As you would expect, nearly every one of these strippers has a backstory that explains why they ended up stripping, whether they were thrown out of their house by their religious parents, or someone's a single mom, somebody had no other, could find no other options, some have, addictions, whatever the reasons are, they're in this situation where, and then the guys, the truth is, like, these guys, these rich guys, yeah, it's a shame, but they kind of have it coming.
So you're not feeling for them.
Not really.
No.
Not really. Very strong. Very strong film.
Well, it's interesting. Producer Jeff and I were just talking and, said that it seems like every 7 to 10 years or so you get a stripper movie, but this one feels different. And it's directed by a woman. It's produced by several women. There's editing by women. And J-Lo's been talking about this.
Lorene Scafaria is the writer and director of this. The other thing that's really interesting, too, this is based on a New York Magazine article, a nonfiction actual article, because this really happened. So it has some, which, again, a lot of the best movies, they come out of magazine articles or clearly books that have kind of done the research on this. It's a fascinating story. And yeah, it's just really stylish too. And yeah, it gets into some dark moments, but mostly it's kind of breezy and a lot of fun. A great looking film. And yes, Jennifer Lopez is really good in it. Do I think she's going to win an Oscar?
Hmm.
No.
No.
And also, I saw some buzz out of Toronto for Best Actress. It's a supporting role. Constance Wu's character is the main character. And Cardi B is in there playing a stripper, which we know is method acting for her because she did that.
Very difficult.
She's in it for 5 minutes, though. It's not they're using it for publicity. It's great.
Uh-huh.
But it's really the core is about the Constance Wu and Jennifer Lopez characters. And Jennifer Lopez is really good. I could see her maybe getting a supporting actress nomination, but I still think that's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it seems like that buzz is out there. I guess there's also buzz that she may be a halftime performance at the Super Bowl.
Well, she should do the number she did here in the movie.
Oh,
Whoa.
With a pole.
That might not make the mom so happy. I don't know. Not every mom looks like her for 50 years old either. True. My gosh. Look at Jennifer Lopez. She does not age. She looks amazing.
She looks, she's absolutely gorgeous. You know. And obviously she has the time to do everything. But, and the way it's shot too, which was very smart by the director, when she's, when Jennifer Lopez has her big dance number on the screen, you know it's her because it's shot in a way where you're like, that is, there may be one or two long shots where it's not her. And when you see her, I will say this with all due respect, you know why A-Rod is in such a good mood all the time now.
Because she's like, this is fantastic.
Yes.
Well, I remember covering her when she did her first major film, Selena, in Houston, and it was based on a woman in Selena. I had covered that tragic case. Well, beautiful, just a wonderful, just talented musician.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was like everyone, the buzz around her was she has a long career in Hollywood. And as you suggested, there was these duds and these rom-coms and things that didn't seem to really bring much out of her.
She just played, you know, off her likability. And I think, you know, she's had so much else going on in her life.
Hugely successful.
And, you know, with all the other things that she does, I don't think acting has been a huge priority for her. But this is a film that shows if she gets a good role and it's well written, you always are aware that it's Jennifer Lopez because she's, you know, such an icon and been around for so long. But you believe her as this character.
Huh. That's good.
Smoking the cigarettes, wearing the fur coat, throwing out the F bombs, you know, and the mastermind of this plan. I buy her completely as the character.
Oh, all right. 3.5 stars for Hustlers. We're going to come back, take a break here, talk about Unbelievable and The Goldfinch here with Richard Roper of The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Let's check in with Kim Gordon right now, see what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN News.
Ahead of tonight's Democratic debate, President Trump predicting today who he'll face in the 2020 election. We'll tell you who he believes his opponent will be coming up.
It's The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is reviewing movies right now. We said Jennifer Lopez, very believable, very good in Hustlers, 3.5 stars. Go see that. We also have The Goldfinch and Unbelievable. Richard.
Yeah, let's talk about Unbelievable, Anna. And, you know, I often get bogged down in titles. You know, in fact, Hustlers, there was a movie earlier this year called Hustle, and there's been The Hustle. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame sometimes because even when you call it up in a couple of months on video on demand, you might get the wrong thing. So, Unbelievable, which is, by the way, I'm going to say right off the bat, 3.5 stars. It's a great series, but there have been so many things called Unbelievable over the years. I wish they'd come up with something different. But this is really strong work, and it also is based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning article and also a documentary. And it's about... it centers on Caitlin Dever, who's an 18-year-old who's just in the movie called Booksmart. She's a wonderful young actress. She's living at a community home for at-risk youth. She came from foster homes, had a very tough life. She reports a rape to the police, to the authorities. Says an intruder broke into her apartment, raped and abused her, and beat her repeatedly over like a 3-hour period, and then left.
Oh my God.
It's really tough to watch as she talks about all this. But as a lot of, you know, we've heard from a lot of people saying from victims and people in the system that sometimes rape victims feel like they've been assaulted a second time because of the process they have to go through, where they have to give interviews to multiple sources, you know, police, go through the medical, inspection, and their stories often being doubted. And that's what this movie's about, because very early on, the police and even this girl's former foster mother have doubts about whether she's telling the truth.
I know this is hard, but I need to ask you some questions about what happened.
He tied my hands. He said if I screamed, he'd kill me.
No signs of forced entry. Doors and windows were locked. No DNA. Not a single neighbor saw or heard a thing.
He brought a blindfold, but nothing to tie her with. Would a shoelace even hold her?
You think Marie made up the attack?
I'm pretty positive that it happened.
Pretty positive or positive?
They just kept asking me the same question. How come your story doesn't add up? I wanted to go home.
I don't have a victim here. It's bogus. She made it up.
Gee.
Now, all of this is taking place in Washington State in 2008. Then the series shifts to Colorado 2011, where two female detectives are working on a case where they are finding out about a lot of assaults that sound exactly the same. And they start coming up with the theory that it's one serial predator. Mm. And Toni Collette and Merritt Weaver, two terrific actresses, play these Colorado detectives. It's very interesting. And again, this happened in real life, the two female detectives. And part of it is they've got a very different way of responding to these stories than the male investigators do, because they either know someone or in some cases have experienced it themselves. So they're much more sympathetic and empathetic, but also much less
willing to just say, you know what, I think she's making it up. So meanwhile, in Washington State, the 18-year-old girl eventually gets charged with filing a false report.
Oh, my gosh.
While in Colorado State, the detectives are piecing together a case. But even 10 years ago, there wasn't always the communications between departments and counties.
Still have problems.
Still isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very fascinating. It's a little bit like there's a Netflix series called Mindhunters, which has become a monumental hit. And that's about two FBI agents who are profiling real-life serial killers. Well, this is also based on a true story. And has some of the same vibe, but it's very different. The acting in this is Emmy Award winning worthy. The writing as well. And yeah, it's heavy subject matter, but it's really good too. And it's not all heavy. There's time for humanity. There's time for humor in the series. I believe if you start watching this, it's 8 episodes on Netflix, which will be available, I think, tomorrow. Saturday at the latest. I think if you start watching this, you'll find yourself watching all 8 episodes because you want to know what's going to happen.
Oh my gosh, I already want to know. We've only seen her in one other thing. You said this. This
Caitlin
character.
Dever, the young Dever, actress.
I don't know the name.
She was in Booksmart, which is a big, kind of indie film earlier. She's done some other things, but she's about the age of the character she's playing, and she's great in it. And if people don't know the names Toni Collette and Merritt Weaver, when you see them, you'll recognize them. They're on all kinds of TV shows.
I know them.
So check that out.
All right. And that one you're giving?
3.5 stars.
3.5 stars. And you said it's available on Netflix when?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
All 8 episodes of the series. It's sort of like, True Detective, where there's new seasons. It's a continuing series. This could have been a season on True Detective or Fargo. It's that strong.
Got it. Okay. And then they make it last 8 episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's no dead spots in it. It moves along. And then let's finally, Anna,
talk about
the Goldfinch. Now, this is a movie that, before it came out, a lot of people were saying, this sounds like Oscar buzz. It's based on a Pulitzer Prize winning novel.
Okay.
So you got pedigreed material.
Good so far.
It stars Nicole Kidman, Academy Award winner, Jeffrey Wright, who's
terrific.
A great actor. Finn Wolfhard, the kid from Stranger Things, who's also in It Chapter 2, is in this. Ansel Elgort, who's a young actor, was in Baby Driver and other things, really good. And it's very serious material. It's about a young guy. He's about 13 years old. He's with his mother in a museum in New York City when a terrorist bomb blows up the joint and his mother is killed. We stay with that story, and then about 10 years later with him as a young man. It's the kind of film that has all the best intentions in the world, and I found it to just be endless, Anna. It's 2 hours and 46 minutes long. It's filled
alone
with cliches, and it really should be hitting us emotionally really hard, and it never really does. One of the most disappointing movies of the year. 2 stars, just because it's so well made, it has a great cast. But read the book if you get a chance. It's a brilliant novel by Donna Tartt, but sometimes the translation just doesn't work to the big screen.
Well, yeah. The Nicole Kidman and Sarah Paulson, what a waste. I love
total
her.
Waste.
And
total
the,
waste.
I'm
telling you right now, it's the kind of film, it's tough to sit through because of the subject matter, but more so because it just takes forever.
All right, so that one gets 2 stars. You've got The Unbelievable. Go see that on Netflix tomorrow. You can start watching it. 3.5 stars. And then Hustlers. J-Lo.
Yeah.
That's a good choice,
too. There you have it.
Thank you, Richard Roper. Time for Kim Gordon's news. Right now at the bottom of the hour here on WGN, and it is sponsored by, hang on a second, by Townstone Financial. Here's Kim. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Our guest is former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Sean, thank you for being on the show with us.
Thanks, Anna. I appreciate you having me.
Okay, so you're here in Chicago for a special event, and we want to get to that, the why you're here part, in a moment. But got to ask you about Dancing with the Stars coming up in a couple of days here. You're a Monday. Are you ready to bust a move? Have you been in the dancing rehearsals, I'd imagine, for hours and hours and days? What's the deal?
Yeah, officially today is day one of week 3. So we practice about roughly 4 hours a day. And I would say I'm improving.
Can you tell us what you're working on now? Is it the rumba, the tango? Are you able to tell us what style of dance you're working on next?
They've asked us to keep our partners in the dance style until show night Monday.
Okay.
At 8 p.m. or 7 central in your case.
Right.
Because they want to add an element of surprise. So I'm not really sure that it would matter in my case what you call it. until I perform it might be insulting the style of dance.
Harder than it looks, I think. I think that's what we could say. It's fun nonetheless, and it's certainly, I'm sure, a welcome change from the stress of where you were. Where would you describe you are now with life in terms of kind of having some more calm and balance and, I guess, ability to, look back and see what you were part of before when you were part of the hectic pace of the White House?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question, Anna, because there's a couple things. One is you mentioned the hectic pace of the White House, and that's a very fitting term. And what I've realized is that because of that intensity, it took a while to be able to sit back and reflect on what had actually happened, the good and the bad, because you're going at such a pace that you don't have time to think about what has happened. You're trying to just keep up with the moment and to some degree get ahead of it. But you don't have a lot of time for reflection. So I've had a lot of time to think about what happened, my experience there, and then just sort of philosophize about where we are as a country and what's happening in our country. And then, you know, it's been great to be able to spend more time with my family. Mm-hmm. I know that term gets thrown around a ton, but until you've been in this, you don't fully appreciate sometimes the time that people spend away from their families to go, whether it's, you know, do something like a campaign or serve in government or what have you, serve in the military. You spend a lot of time away from your family. You miss events. And being able to go to those things, I dropped my kids off for school, shortly after I left the White House. And it was the first time I had done it in quite some time.
Right. You're in Chicago for this event today at Northeastern Illinois University. And there are protests scheduled to happen. It's going to be you, Donna Brazile, kind of having a debate about politics, where we are now, and the 2020 election season. Obviously, she's from the Democratic side, you from the Republican side, but there's students, within hours of you being announced, Sean, I want to get your reaction to this. There were students who said, hey, he shouldn't be here. They signed petitions. They tried to get the university president to say you shouldn't be there. And the university president said, no, we're going to have a polite debate. We're going to have a difference of opinions, and we're going to put both sides up on stage, and we're going to learn from that. And I just want to get your take to, were you surprised it caused controversy, your appearance?
Not so much. I mean, I've spoken on probably 15 college campuses, everything from UMass Amherst to Penn. I've been out at Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you this. This is what is fascinating. I actually was applauded at the end of my speech at Berkeley.
Wow.
Which I was shocked by. But what I found was a lot of these students, and look at the event that's happening today. You got 400 tickets that sold out a couple weeks ago.
Right.
There is a yearning, especially among a lot of young people right now, to understand policies and point of views that may be contrary to what they think they believe. And to understand different points of view, different policies, different ways of life. And so, good on the university president for standing up for this, because, you know, I had a similar experience in college where my fellow students at the time blocked conservative speakers from coming to campus. Mm-hmm. I look back on that experience and I thought, you know, that is such a shallow point of view. The idea that the left, these people who preach tolerance and inclusivity, block people because they disagree with them, protest them. If they want to come and write a letter, frankly, I don't care. They have every right under our Constitution to come and protest and make their voices heard. But the funny thing is they're depriving people of understanding a different point of view. Look, I Donna, who will be on the stage with me, is a friend of mine. I've known her for a long time. She was chair of the Democratic National Committee when I was at the RNC, and we worked together.
Well, she got it. Let's not gloss over that yet. She got into trouble of her own, and the Bernie supporters can't possibly be happy with what she did when the debate questions. And I know she's come to terms with that since and owned up to it and that kind of thing. But at the time, many Bernie supporters felt that she was undermining the system of democracy by picking a winner and a loser in the Democratic primary, favoring Hillary Clinton. So it's interesting to me, I guess, that there aren't any protesters for her. They really are there for you.
I think two things. One is the right doesn't, I mean, first of all, who's, you're right. I mean, there's a subset on the left that had an issue with her among the Bernie supporters. And frankly, I think that they're less focused on the past than they are about Senator Sanders' current campaign. I get it, but I think there are people on the right that could take issue with the fact of how the DNC handled all of the fact that they never turned over any of the servers that they were when they were trying to be hacked by Russia and hid them from the FBI. I mean, there's a lot of things that I could take issue with this. You know, I've spoken on countless, probably well over a dozen college campuses. And what is interesting afterwards is I don't necessarily think people necessarily walk away and say, oh, my God, I agree with everything that Sean said. But they'll say, wow, I never understood things from that point of view. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that based on my own college experience, where I went to a school that largely was devoid of giving conservatives a voice, it deprived students of understanding the world that we live in, the world that is in this country, who cares what, you know, 45, 45, 50, 50, whatever it is, there's clearly a good chunk of people on one side of the aisle and another group on the other side. And to sit back and to self-select and say, I don't want any voices that don't agree with the agenda that I am supporting is pretty close-minded.
Well, you know, I think you make an excellent point in that it feels as if more and more there are a few places in America, it seems, where there is a free exchange of ideas respectfully when there are divergent viewpoints. We live in echo chambers and we seem to be very happy and satisfied with that, whether it's social media or so many other places where we just shout each other down. But a university should be, by its very nature, a place of learning, respecting other opinions, taking them in as you form your own opinions at such a young age and understand where the other side or the full range of opinions from people, where they're coming from. So to me, I do applaud Northeastern for allowing both of you to go up there, and I'm sure will be a respectful debate of the issues moving forward. Let me ask you about that, because as we talk about 2020, there is a debate tonight for the Democrats as they try to whittle away their pack. I know it's the other side. A lot of people like our former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, are out there out front saying we're pulling too far left that we're not electable. You've got Biden sort of polling at the top of the pack. Do you think that the Democratic nominee ultimately will be Joe Biden, or do you think it'll be someone else?
So here's my take on this. I currently am a believer in Sanders, and I'll tell you why. I think that if you look at the primary calendar for the Democrats, it starts in Iowa. Sanders did very well there last time. For all intents and purposes, he actually won. His strength is organizing. Iowa is a caucus state. You got 99 counties where organizing is key. You got to get your people to your caucus sites. Sanders, that's his strength. I think he actually, despite what any poll says, because remember, it's a small state, so polling isn't necessarily a strong indicator, because it's all about whether or not you can get your supporters to go to those caucus sites, sit there for hours on end, go to the corners over and over again, and ultimately prevail. I actually think that's a huge advantage for Sanders. I think right now the advantage is his going into Iowa. Then I think he goes to New Hampshire, where he's a native son. Yesterday, a poll came out that showed him taking a huge leap forward over Joe Biden. I actually think if he's on pace right now, he wins both of the first two contests. He loses South Carolina. It's got a heavy African-American contingent. I think that Biden and Kamala Harris will actually do well there. But then it pivots down to Nevada, where it's a heavy union state. Again, it goes back to Sanders' strength in terms of organizing, because it's a caucus state. Heavy unionized. And so I think that Sanders has a chance to pull off a win in the first three or four contests, which would propel him well going forward. However, if he stumbles, my guess is that right behind him is Elizabeth Warren. I think Joe Biden is a falling star, not a rising one.
Interesting. You know, let me ask you something about press briefing, Sean. You were White House press secretary for, what, 6 months?
Yep.
Now we have a situation where we don't see White House press briefings. The president seems to just be out front himself. I can't imagine reporters having too much of a problem with that, hearing directly from the president. Are you surprised that it's sort of moved in this direction, where we are here now with the president sort of circumventing that process?
Well, it's not. Look, I get your point. I take issue with how it's phrased, though. Look, a press secretary's job is to speak in the absence of the principal, right? So whether it's the president or the head of an organization or a company or whatever, if that person can't speak, the job of the spokesman is to go out there and do it. In this case, you have a president that, by all measures, is engaging with the media more than anyone has ever before. It's almost multiple times a day, in many cases, that you're hearing directly from him, answering reporters' questions. Now, I know it's not physically in the briefing room, but I don't know why that matters. If you are hearing from the president of the United States multiple times a day, interacting with the media, where they're able to ask, you know, questions on whatever topic they want, then I'm really not entirely sure why you then need to go hear from a spokesperson in a room that they, you know, it's sort of, the issue becomes logistics right now, where they're saying, well, we'd rather have it in the briefing room. Why? You know, that's not how it works. They don't get to pick that. The president wants to have it in the Oval Office or meet with the press outside. That's fine. But democracy is being served. The press is being given the access to the highest government official in our country. And so you know, look, I think that the briefing serves a utility. I hope, you know, and like you saw yesterday, you had Secretary Pompeo and Secretary of the Treasury Mnuchin go into the briefing room, take questions, talk about some of the sanctions that were being issued, et cetera, some of the other issues that we're facing in foreign policy. So I actually think that when you look at what's going on right now, you are actually seeing more face time with the principals in our government that are making decisions and less time with the appointed staff.
Mm-hmm. I take your point. And I think the whole nature of that White House press briefing took on a whole new life when this president became president. It became must-watch TV, and it was like a reality show, and it seemed there was a lot of there was some showboating going on with reporters, for sure. I remember everyone calling your name, Sean. I mean, maybe you're haunted by that to this day. Like, when you hear Sean, I was like, oh my gosh, that would drive me nuts. But that was part of the job. I get it. And it felt like it just took on a whole new life, and I wonder if you were really prepared for that eventuality.
You know, no, I joke with people, I've been at the Republican National Committee for about 6 years. I'd done well over 500 television appearances, and the closest I ever got to being recognized was in the sweater section of a Joseph A. Bank store. So to suddenly go from that, you know, I obviously knew that there was going to be additional notoriety from that job, but to suddenly turn into a situation where everybody, you know, is seeing your face, knows your name, is not something that I anticipated that level of intensity and scrutiny for by any means.
Certainly one of the tougher jobs in the administration, for sure, as well. Sean Spicer, we appreciate you giving us some time here. We can see you on Dancing with the Stars, and also you're in Chicago to appear at Northeastern Illinois University on the stage with Donna Brazile. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it. And I don't think I never thought I'd say this in my life, but, you know, to everyone in your listening audience out there in Chicago, next Monday night, please vote for me. I never thought I'd ask for a vote.
Oh, my gosh. You're begging for votes, Sean.
I know.
What's going on?
I'm begging for votes. I never thought I'd do it. Maybe Rom can give me some tips how to, you know.
Is that important to you?
But, you know what? It would be fun. Look, the odds maker have me at 50-1. I'm supposed to lose right away. So I think, you know, I think beating the odds would be fun. But regardless, I'm going to have a blast.
I bet you will. Vote for Sean. All right, Sean. Sean Spicer, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Enjoy Chicago. All right, that was our interview with Sean Spicer. We're going to check in to see what's happening at the top of the hour here on WGN Radio in the news. All right, that wraps up another edition of the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Ro is back tomorrow. In the Manana, the Green Tie Ball will be hosting tomorrow night, in case people want to get the tickets to help enhance the greenery of the city. That's what it's all about.
Grant and you Porter. And Ro are the co-hosts?
That's right. We'll be
awesome.
Out there in the West Loop at the Alhambra Palace this year. I know, because they get so many people that show up at this
amazing.
Thing. They need a huge venue, and this year it's there. So I dream of greeny.
Great.
Tomorrow night.
Awesome. That's fun. Do you like doing that kind of stuff?
Yeah,
like hosting the big events?
That is such a fun party. It really is. It's got, you know, it's one of those black ties where people are mixing and walking around and just dancing and having a great time, sampling food from different tables. You're moving. You're never really sitting down at a table.
Do the two of you, do you wing it, or is it more like
Well, Grant
Porter
does not allow us to wing these things.
Good.
He's very control freak in his nature. And so we've been sent a script. I'm sure Ro will take it and rip it up and throw it away.
Right.
I have looked through it, and I will do it. Try to, you know, go buy the
Well, if you
if
need in the next 24 hours, if you need a Bruce Valanche type guy to just kind of look at the jokes and see if they work, I'd be more than happy.
Test them out for us.
More than happy to
I
help you
I find in
out.
These situations, the less talking, the better, because people are just wanting to have a good time. Like, yay, go. I don't know. You know, bid on live
so
auction
true.
Stuff and then
so
just have fun. What do you got coming up, Mr.
Coming
Duffin?
Up, Heather Sharon's going to join us from the Daily Line to talk about all the things that are happening this week in Chicago politics. It's amazing to think about that there are three union negotiations happening in public. When you think about the teachers' contract, which, you know, they're talking about a strike authorization on September 26th. The police, there was early in the week, the mayor, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, was talking
about overtime.
Yeah, about how angry she was about it. And now the fire. They're talking about the wanting concessions in the contract, and the fire department saying, So there's going to be some serious negotiations coming up for this mayor. So we'll talk about that coming up. Also, we are going to continue our series where we get out of the studio, and historian John Schmidt wrote a book called Hidden Chicago Landmarks, and we are We taped a bunch of them. We went to the actual places where these hidden landmarks are.
Can you give us one of them? Yeah. What's hidden?
Well, we did the cow path, the downtown cow path, which I don't know if you're familiar with, which is
cows used to go.
They used to go to the stock exchange, and it was right on Monroe by the. I think it's now like a Hyatt. Like a Hyatt Centric.
Right.
Something like that. Last week, we did... which one did we do last week, Pete? We did... tonight we're doing the Charles Wagner Bridge, which is right at the old post office.
Oh, I keep talking about all the development there and the Uber jobs that are being brought there.
And for all the talk about Ida B. Wells and renaming Congress and the old post office, there's a little bridge that goes over the river right there. Is actually a bridge that was... there's a plaque and there's a whole bit about the history of Chicago politics that plays out in that bridge. We're going to go to the bridge today and tonight, and we're going to talk about that hidden land.
Love that stuff.
So a lot of great stuff coming up tonight on Extension 720.
Have a good show.
Have a good night. Chicago Stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Permasil Basement Systems. Here's David Jennings.